Morning, distinguished guests, to the Portfolio Committee of Transport, honorable members serving in this Portfolio Committee, functionaries from the Department of Transport, members of the public, members of the media, functionaries from the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. Indeed, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first one. It started some 7-8 years ago with the National Land Transport Act. And all said and done, laws and legislations are not static. On a regular basis, there will be, as you're functioning, you see that this one is not working according to your anticipation and expectation. And as the community evolves, so are the laws. There's always evolution in life. We are here because there are amendments that must be made to this legislation, the bill that is in front of us. We received presentations through the publications that we made as Parliament from various organizations, individuals, associations that we will be engaging with, from people who will be representing those institutions. We today have got a number of organizations that will be making presentation here. And we believe that the presentation as shall be made will be in the interest of making sure that the bill as amended can be able to achieve its objectives and is able to assist in terms of working towards the land transport, which is properly coordinated, properly integrated, working for the people of the Republic of South Africa. Having said that, my name is Dikeledi Magadzi. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. On this, I would call it a front row. Next to me here, we've got Honorable Ramatlakane, if you can just indicate, who is a member of the committee, Honorable Maswanganyi, member of the committee, Honorable Sibande, member of the committee, and I go to the next row. Just closer to me here, good-looking young man, Honorable De Freitas. The young man here, good looking, and then also have Honorable Humsinga. These are the members of the Portfolio Committee which are here. We shall be starting with the presentation from Uber. I would request Ms. Mashilwani as the presenter to introduce the team that is accompanying her from Uber. When we finish with Uber presentation, there will be discussions. Let me indicate that you are given some 45 minutes and then we will have discussions. And then we will go into the Uber drivers, the drivers guild that comes from around here in Cape Town. The presenter, Mr. Muzwenga, I hope I've pronounce it properly, yeah. You'll also be given allotted almost a similar slot, 30 to 45 minutes, and then we will get the South African Meter Taxi Association. All these three presentations will take us to lunch, and then we will continue with the others after lunch. Ms. Mashilwani, welcome, and like I said, every team, please make sure that you introduce the people that are accompanying you so that it will be easy for us as we do discussions to identify people accordingly. Thank you very much. Let me give and say it is your turn to present to the Portfolio Committee. You're welcome once more.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Mema Gazi. Good morning to the Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, members of the public, our colleagues from the Public Transport Fraternity. Thank you very much for affording us the opportunity to present our case. I am Yolisa Mashilwane. I am the head of public policy at Uber South Africa, and I'm with my colleagues. On my left-hand side, I've got Mr. Alon Litz, who's the GM for Uber Sub-Sahara. On my right-hand side, I have Mr. Jonathan Ayachi, who's the GM for Cape Town. Between the three of us, we'll be sharing the presentation and also taking the question, Madam Chair. We will be taking you through the Uber platform, the impact on South Africa, industry engagement, as well as in the main, the National Land Transport Amendment Bill, that is our submissions. So I'll hand over to Alon to take care of the first half of the presentation before I carry on. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members and Members of the Public. We're going to briefly take you through the Uber platform, give you a sense for who Uber is as a technology company, explain some of the features of the application with a specific focus of the safety features of the Uber application, and then we're going to briefly outline the partnership structure that we have with driver partners across the country. So very high level, Uber is a smartphone application that connects professional drivers with riders at a touch of a button. So what we do, we make it easier for people to move around their cities, and we increase economic opportunity for driver partners using the platform. So why do riders enjoy using the platform? A few of the points that are often told to us is the reliability of the platform. We're now at a point across South Africa where in 5 minutes or less you can get access to safe, reliable, and affordable rides. The pricing of the platform is extremely affordable. It's transparent pricing in that you can obtain a fair estimate and see the pricing clearly displayed in the application before you take a ride. It's accessible to everyone and everywhere. Areas that were previously underserved by taxi now have access to safe, reliable, and affordable rides. Safety, which I'm going to talk to in more detail later, and accountability, which is extremely important. And why I say accountability, at the end of a ride, you get to rate your driver, and that goes both ways. Drivers also rate their riders, so it's very important that the platform is one of mutual respect. And in addition to that, there is a 24/7 support team available to both riders and drivers in the event of any emergency. On the driver partner side, why do drivers enjoy partnering with Uber? It's the flexibility of the platform. Uber does not own any cars and we do not employ any drivers. Drivers set their own hours, they choose when and where to work, and Uber provides an additional economic opportunity, an additional earning opportunity. Something which we'll go into in more detail is that there is a large number of meter taxi operators who continue to operate in the way that they did before Uber launched in the market, but use Uber to really minimize their downtime and maximize their earnings. Another point is safety, which is extremely important. On the driver side, across our main cities, we have an emergency number which is linked to armed response in the event that drivers feel unsafe in any shape or form. And as I mentioned on the rider side, there's accountability. If riders are inappropriate or aggressive towards driver partners, we can ban their access to the platform. Very high level, we take a 25% service fee for trips booked on the platform. There are no joining fees, there are no membership fees. So if a driver chooses to partner with Uber but doesn't do any trips on the platform, there's no cost to being on the platform. So very high level, going through the process of requesting a ride. When you open up the application, we'll pick up your location, so you don't need to know your exact address. That's using the phone's technology. We have multiple vehicle options available, Uber Black being the premium option and then Uber X being the more affordable option. Once you request your ride, from a safety perspective, You get to see a picture of the driver, he or she, that is picking you up, as well as the vehicle information, the car type, the registration, and you'll actually be able to watch that car drive towards you in real time. So there's no waiting outside for that vehicle to arrive. Importantly, and a point that I spoke to earlier, is that you get to rate your driver. So you can provide feedback, good or bad, as to what type of service you receive during the trip. To touch on those safety features, before drivers gain access to the platform, all drivers have to have professional driver's permits. In addition to that, and in addition to the checks involved for a professional driver's permit, drivers go through additional third-party APHIS checks. All vehicles are inspected. This year we introduced third-party inspections by a third-party independent company to ensure that vehicle quality is of the highest quality. And as I mentioned, safe pickups, you don't need to wait outside for your trip. You watch the vehicle drive towards you and only go there when the vehicle arrives. During the trip, we have functionality which allows you to share the trip details with someone. So personally, with my wife, if she's traveling by herself, she can send me a link to the trip that she's on, and I can monitor the trip, watch her get picked up, and watch her drive along the route until she's dropped off. There's a GPS-enabled map, which means that every minute and every meter of a trip on the Uber platform is recorded, and we can use that information post the fact if there is any form of police investigation. Their payment option, something which we'll talk to later, is that you can pay with either card or cash, and we recently introduced cash earlier this year, which has been extremely beneficial to increasing the number of riders gaining access to the platform. After, as I mentioned, there's ratings and feedback, there's a full trip history, we know who picked you up, where they picked you up, where they dropped you off, and we have a 24/7 incident response team. Again, just looking at the partnership structure, who are our partners, just to go through those key points once again. We're a technology company, we don't own any vehicles, we don't employ any drivers, anyone meeting the requirements can join, there's no favoritism there. There's no fee to join and no ongoing membership fees. There are two main groups of partners. First of all is fleet partners, so these are individuals who potentially own a number of vehicles and then employ a number of drivers directly. So we partner with both the vehicle owner, who then employ a driver. What we're seeing though is that that structure is changing in favor of independent operators. So these are individuals who own their own vehicles, potentially rent a vehicle from a vehicle finance partner, which on the back of a deal that we've structured that we're going to talk to in more detail, but that is really our focus, increasing the number of independent operators on the platform who own their own vehicles and set their own hours and really take the lion's share of the income from the platform. So just to talk to the impact of Uber in South Africa, I'm going to give you a quick overview of our journey so far in South Africa, some of the growth that we've experienced, how technology empowers entrepreneurs, some of the ways we engage with driver partners, and because I know it's quite a topical subject, talking about the introduction of cash in South Africa. So the overview since our launch in September 2013, so roughly 3 years ago, we launched, first of all, in Johannesburg, quickly followed by Cape Town and then Durban. Something that we're very proud of as a South African team is that Uber in South Africa, this was the first country outside of the United States where Uber was initially founded to have three cities operational at the same time. And why I raise that point, I think it gives you a sense for how well Uber's been received by both riders and drivers in the South African community. We now operate in 5 cities across South Africa, Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, Pretoria, and Port Elizabeth. Over 500,000 unique people have taken rides using the application. That's over 500,000 South Africans as at February 2016. So we are beginning to make an impact of changing the way that people move around South African cities. There are over 4,000 driver partners on the platform. So what Uber is doing through technology, it's becoming a huge engine for economic opportunity and increased earnings. What's interesting from a tourism perspective is that we've seen over 70 different nationalities take rides with Uber in South Africa. So often the first thing that tourists do when they arrive in a new city, they open up their Uber application. We're in over 450 cities around the world, and they try and take a ride. To give you a sense for the growth that we've experienced, if you look at the map that's currently up on the screen, if you see those blue dots, that represents someone looking who's actually taken a request using the Uber application. If we look at that same map 2 years later, you can see it tells a very different story, with demand coming from everywhere across the city. It's not limited to certain areas, and these are areas that were previously underserved by taxi. It's a very similar story in Cape Town. If we look at that map in 2014 and compare the growth to 2016, we're seeing demand consistently across our cities. And then the same, this is Durban in 2014, you can see the increased demand into 2016. So what we consistently see is increased demand for the platform. The more reliable the product becomes, the more demand there is from riders looking to move around their city. Something which we're very passionate about is increasing access to individual operators. That's really the core of our business strategy globally and in South Africa. We have a number of partnerships with various providers, one of them being WestBank, where on the back of a driver partner's rating on the Uber platform, he or she can gain access to vehicle finance through a full maintenance lease, regardless of their credit record. So that really starts to reduce barriers to capital and access to capital and access to vehicles, increasing economic opportunity. To date, over 200 million rand has been invested supporting over 1,000 driver partners who've started their own businesses on the back of their partnership with Uber. To touch on some of the driver partner engagement, as Uber we have two types of customers. First of all, riders using the application to move around. And secondly, driver partners who use the application to increase their earning opportunities. If I first look at online channels, we have in-app or email support that's available 24 hours a day, and our average response times through that channel, through any question that driver partners raise, is roughly 10 hours. We have online resources made available both through the application and through our website, which is obviously available 24 hours a day through self-service channels. We've recently introduced chat support, especially for cities where we don't have a full-time presence, to ensure that driver partners can chat with a live representative, answering any questions that they have. And then finally, we send out weekly and monthly emails and SMSs to driver partners with information around our marketing opportunities, around what the busy areas are, the busy times of days. Obviously, we can't set times of when driver partners work or tell them where to work, but we do provide them with as much information as possible to help them increase their earning opportunity. From an in-person perspective, we have daily in-person support for any queries that cannot be solved online. The average wait time for driver partners coming through to our green light hubs is less than 15 minutes. We've recently, this year, started focus groups, where we have monthly engagements with smaller groups of driver partners to understand how we can improve the platform. One of the points raised, just to talk to a live example, was some complaints around drivers waiting at the airport at Cape Town International. We've recently created a new waiting area with some parking and some place for driver partners to gather. And we'll be looking to opening up a new green light hub in that area shortly to improve the experience further. We also look to hold business reviews on a semi-annual basis to provide driver partners with an update on the platform and the business and any product innovations. I'm going to quickly talk to the introduction of cash. The real rationale behind the introduction of cash was that we were seeing a large number of individuals who were signing up to the Uber platform and not taking rides. We could obviously communicate with these individuals. When you sign up to the platform, you provide your email address and your mobile number, and we try to understand why were they not taking rides on the platform. And the biggest reason raised was either a hesitation to use credit card or check card information online, or a lack of access to credit or check cards. So what the introduction of cash has done is increased the access to the platform, making efficient public transport available to a larger base of South Africans. What was interesting is when an independent survey has been run, most people who would consider moving to Uber, it's really getting people out of their own personal private vehicles and not people who were previously using meter taxi. So what we believe by creating this affordable, extremely reliable transportation option in our cities, people have a real alternative to car ownership. Safety is consistently a big point raised around cash. We've seen no increase in safety incidences related to cash since the launch. Some of the proactive measures that we've taken is that we've got a partnership with FNB where drivers can drop off cash 24/7 through ATMs around the city. We have a security team with armed response. In fact, we've just launched an SOS button in Johannesburg, also coming through focus groups, where drivers can touch an SOS button. It's linked to over 200 private security companies in Johannesburg, and the average response times there are less than 10 minutes. We'll obviously see how that works, and if that scales, it's something that we're going to look to roll out across the country. We've also run a dash cam pilot in Cape Town, where there's actually a camera in the vehicle to protect both riders and drivers and ensure that there's an additional layer of security for the platform. From a market growth perspective and a point that I raised before, we've expanded the market for public transport. These were people who were previously reliant on their own private vehicles who are now moving around the city using the Uber platform. And importantly, Uber is an open platform. We're actively engaging with current and previous meter taxi operators who may want to join the Uber platform, and we're looking at reducing the barriers for partnership, which my colleague will touch on shortly. So with that, I hand over.
Thanks, Alon. Madam Chairperson, I think it's a known fact that there has been some challenges between ourselves and the metered and the minibus taxi industry. Because of that, we then made a concerted effort to start continuous engagements between ourselves and them. The challenges in the main is that there's obviously resistance to change, which is something that we understand. Anything new is bound to unsettle anyone, whether it is in the public transport space or a tourism industry, whatever the case may be. The biggest challenge, obviously, was intimidation and violence. At the point where we were really keen on starting these engagements, the biggest barrier was sitting around the table in an environment where your life is being threatened. It is a volatile industry in terms of structures. One day you speak to this structure, the next day you are told that those are not the right people, and those are serious and true challenges that we face in our engagements. There is also one elephant in the room, which is the backlogs in terms of the issuance of operating licenses. That challenge doesn't just affect the public transport industry as we know it, it affects all of us in the business. Vehicle quality was also another challenge that we face as we engage with them. Obviously, we've set certain standards in terms of the type of vehicles that we are looking for. The majority of them had vehicles that were slightly older than what we required in terms of our quality standards. And obviously, access to finance, you find that the business owner doesn't have a vehicle that qualifies. They do want to apply for vehicle financing, but because of their credit history, they would be unable to. And these are some of the things that we've encountered in our engagements. In terms of our strategy, we then set up a consultation with both meter taxi and minibus operators. This happens at different levels. Those associations that are happy to come as an association in terms of our engagements, we do that. There are associations that would rather be represented by their national body, which is SANTACO. We're open to that. There are those individuals who would prefer not to be represented by neither SANTACO or their associations, but come as individuals. We do meet those at an individual level. The goal in the main is to better understand each other's operating models. They have a model that has been running for over 50 years. We came with a new model that was based on innovation. And again, the main discussion point there was to say that it might be unsettling to see things happening over a tap of a button over a phone, but that's how business is being run in these days, whether you're talking a doctor setting up an appointment. So basically, in the main, we wanted them to understand how we operate, and we wanted to understand how they operate. We also had to spend a lot of time explaining that we are an open technology platform. It is not for a chosen few. It is not for those who belong to a certain group. It's a platform that is open to anyone and everyone who qualifies in terms of our requirements. As I've indicated, in terms of the challenges, some of the vehicles are rather old and some of the owners don't have good credit history. That's when we created what we call the financial assistance through the vehicle support program, where we then start by assisting them to be in contact with a vehicle that they can use for the first 6 months. During those 6 months, we track their performance, we track how their earnings are, and then we link them to a financier that we have partnered with. That financier doesn't really care much about their bank balance at that point in time of application. It doesn't care about the credit history, whether they've owed money to Edgar's or whatever the case the creditor may be. They look at the performance on the platform during those first 6 months. Progress to date, Madam Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, is that we have 30 to 40% of our supply coming from the existing meter taxi. We do have a smaller percentage coming from the minibus taxi, who now are shifting, not letting go of their minibus taxi operations, but trying something new in a smaller vehicle environment. But as I said, that is much smaller than the metered taxi operators that are coming onto the platform. These guys, when they do come onto the platform, they do not join the waiting list. We rather facilitate expediently their joining of the platform. The success we've made to date, and I'd like to point out that it was actually the most difficult, is the KZN meter taxi, which solicited the support of Santaco in KZN. The first five discussions were rather not the best of discussions one has ever experienced in their lifetime. Safe to say that as of last week, we've trained 29 of them. They are joining the platform. They have been registered. Their vehicles are being tested. They're going through background checks. We can't necessarily say that we're out of the woods, but it is nice to say that we're looking at over 300 vehicles coming from the KZN meter taxi operators. Same thing has happened with the Centurion meter taxi in Gauteng. The OR Tambo International operators as well, I'm sure you've seen in the news where at some point drivers were being attacked and passengers were being pulled out of the vehicles. As of last month, the executives came to us to say that we do realize that we can fight Uber as a company, but you cannot fight innovation. We'd rather sit down and talk. To date, they're also bringing their vehicles onto the platform. Same thing has happened with the Western Cape Meter Taxi Council that has joined the platform. In fact, in this particular case, we've signed a memorandum of agreement, which sets out how we can work with each other moving forward. These discussions, Madam Chair, are not a once-off exercise. We are continuously engaging with the public transport operators in the country. In the main, if I go to our submission, which is the proposed amendment changes to the amendment bill, we've got five things that we have submitted. If I start with the first one, it's the introduction of an e-hailing definition in Section 1 of the Act. We do know that there was no definition of an e-hailing platform on the NLTA for reasons all known to us, that it's not something that we saw coming to us in the near future. Our ask, Madam Chair, is that instead of it being defined as a subcategory under meter taxi, our main ask is that the e-hailing platform should be a standalone definition under Section 1. This is not for the purposes of bypassing regulation. It is simply for the reason that we do not know what the future holds in terms of public transport operators. It is feasible that in the near future you'll find minibus taxis using innovation on the system, not necessarily an Uber platform, but any other platform. What we are also seeing, Madam Chair, is that you have operators in the tourism and the charter services that want to join the platform. At this point in time, if they want to join, they need to reapply for an operating license for the same vehicle. They do think that it is double jeopardy on their part because it's the same vehicle, they're just adding an innovation onto the platform. Last but not least, Madam Chair, what we're seeing as well is that the market of e-hailing platforms in the public transport is growing. There are other e-hailing platforms that I don't necessarily need to mention. All we are asking is that if it is a standalone, it allows any other mode of public transport, when that time comes, without having to then revisit the bill to have innovation onto the platform. So that's our first ask. The second ask is around imposing moratoria on the issuing of operating licenses. We know that municipalities have the powers to impose moratoria on the issuance of operating licenses, and it's a reasonable ask on their side based on their current integrated transport plans. If they think that there is no demand or there's an oversupply, they have the power to impose a moratorium. However, our ask in the main, Madam Chair, is that that be done within PAJA. Simply because, by virtue of putting a moratorium, somebody's business is being affected. They can either not grow that business because there's a moratorium. However, if that process is fair and open and people are consulted in the process, it makes it that much easier for people to plan accordingly. Two cities that I know for a fact have imposed a moratorium with no consultation and no proper communication to the people that are affected by the moratoria. When the consultation started on the in the moratoria, there was no written document that could actually confirm that there's a moratorium. Now, for 2 years, minibus were fighting the fact that there's a moratorium, when in actual fact, according to the officials, there was no moratorium. All that we're trying to say is that it should be a process that's fair and open to consultation so that whoever is in that business has a fair enough chance to represent their case. The third ask, Madam Chair, is on the regulations. Section 8.2 of the Act rightly obliges the Minister, before making regulations, to publish a draft for comment. We ask that this very same be extended to the MECs. We know that right now MECs use the Constitution on the basis of stakeholder consultation. All we are asking is exactly for the same reasons that the Minister is obliged to make the regulations, the changes to regulations public, that the MECs have the same obligation. Right now it is not explicit if you look at Section 8.2 of the Amendment Act. Again, this is part of strengthening and making the public participation much more open and robust. Specification of vehicles. Section 54.5 of the Act sets out the requirements for applications for an operating license, that is paragraph E, specify the vehicle or exact type of vehicle to be used for providing the services concerned. We are asking that instead of specifying the exact vehicle, it allows for specification of the category instead of the exact type. So this is what happens. When you apply for an operating license, you are asked to then provide the specification of that vehicle. It's a Toyota Corolla, you mention all the dimensions, whatever is required of you. However, you are not guaranteed an operating license at the end of the day. What then happens if that application is rejected? You are left with a person that has a financial obligation to service a car that doesn't have an operating license. This is what happens when they then get frustrated. They start adding these vehicles on the road without the operating licenses because there's pressure to finance the vehicle. What Port Elizabeth is doing in this case, it asks for the category instead of the exact type. When they've approved your application, you have 3 weeks before it is uplifted, your operating license is uplifted, to give the full details of the vehicle. In that case, you are now having an operating license and you can then get your vehicle on those basis that it can be serviced because it's got a license to operate. The last one, Madam Chair, is the summary disposal of applications. Section 59.3, we are asking that we propose that when no objections have been received on application, it must be disposed of, as opposed to it may be disposed of. It sounds like semantics. All we are saying is that from an administration point of view, from an expediency point of view, if there are no objections to an application, the regulators should therefore dispose of that application immediately. Madam Chair, in closing, all we are saying is that if you look at all the documents that have been produced in terms of the public transport in the country, I'll start from the Constitution, I'll go to the Moving South Africa, I'll then go to the Public Transport Action Strategy of 2007. I'll close off with the National Land Transport Act, which is being amended. Our ask is that we get to be accepted as part of the public transport ecosystem. Our ask is that we get to be recognized as part of the integrated public transport network. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I'm going to be turning around just like that. I recognize Honorable Kibanda, Honorable Masondani, Honorable Humsinga, Honorable Ramatlakana will be the last in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to welcome the presentation, but at the same time, what a gesture all the way from America to South Africa. Chairperson, first of all, you know, there are things which I wanted to ask, beside the issue, the things which they are requesting about Uber as Uber. May you please distinguish yourself between labor brokers and yourself. Why I'm raising it in one of the papers when you talk about partnership and structures, you know, you stated very clearly that Uber does not employ any driver. Uber does not own any vehicle. While at the same time, initially, you said you are here for economic growth, when you said increase economic platform. Then how can you increase platform while you don't create jobs yourself? And you see, Chairperson, what is worrying me is the following. Again, are all active Uber driver partners and partners who employ drivers legal? For an example, do they have valid operation licenses? And again, these operating licenses, are they issued for charter service or under what mode are they licensed? Again, National Department of Transport stated yesterday here that this operating license must be under charter service. Again, Gauteng Province GP and Transport for Cape Town have special arrangements to register chatting service in another way. How many operators used by Uber? That have operating license in each province where they operate. Chairperson, you see, again, I wanted to be honest with you, to you. You know very well the issue, the material condition of South Africa, whereby we are facing a problem of different taxi organizations. To an extent, the government once tried to intervene by mobilizing and organizing that they form one group, which is Santaco, of which that thing never succeeded. But to me, here you find that the way they recruit, their recruitment drive, it's questionable. I'll put an example. If you go to one of your papers who spoke about partnership structure, who are the partners? Again, you said in your fleet partner, someone who managed to drive partners but not drive on platform themselves. You see, it have a loophole of piraters. I'll put an example. You go to our townships where we are having a challenge of taxis and escorts. It means that Uber, they take everybody on board, while some of the people are illegally so. And again, They are saying here, every partner who bought financial additional vehicle to create economic opportunity for others by employing drivers, you see, they just take, to me. That is the sign, they just take. You know, Jefferson, we are the people who are supposed to defend our own people where we have been elected. We can't let it loose like that. We accept some of the people will come and operate illegally, so, and people will encourage that there must be more splinter groups. For example, this morning, somewhere in Eastern Cape, if I'm not mistaken, this taxi war, they are shooting each other because they're fighting off platforms. What about this? We take everything on board. I have got a problem. I'll come again, Chairperson. Please allow me to come again. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. And welcome the presentation. Just few questions. One, we have seen protests and legal actions on Uber internationally, Germany, Spain, America, France, and so on and so on. Also in the main by taxi drivers or taxi companies. And also here in South Africa, we have seen some clashes. What are the problems in the main that you come across with, whether you call them drivers or operators, who use their cars to link with Uber to operate this kind of an e-hailing system? Because there seem to be an outcry from that sector. So just be open to us. I've been following some of the litigations internationally on Uber and some other cases in India and stuff like that. Because amongst other issues is that the other taxi operators, they think that you have got an unfettered kind of restriction. You just go anywhere, anytime. And whereas they themselves have got specific routes where they are supposed to operate. But with Uber, some of your people don't even have licenses to operate on the road as much as they are accredited by Uber. So the other operators in the taxi industry feel that the problem of radius by Uber not being strictly confined to that radius is a problem. I just want to hear from you as to how do you deal with that. We have had some cases before where some of the operators who are linked to your system complain that at the end it impoverished them, because you find somebody buys a car, operate through the Uber system, but at the end he can't manage to pay back the monthly installment with the bank or with the financial institution, and the burden ends up with them, because he must pay the bank, the loan, service the loan, pay for insurance, service the car, and he himself must also be left with money for as a source of living. How do we deal with that? So that, like the question asked by Honorable Span, the system should be able to benefit the operators. And how do you share the money between the driver and Uber? as you operate the technological system. Is there a calculated percentage share that for every payment made by a commuter, Uber will get so much percentage and the operator will get so much percentage? We ask these questions because this is a new system in the world. I mean, it was invented in the UK, I mean, US, is it San Francisco, something like that. So when you come to a developing country, remember US and South Africa are not the same. Sometimes when we are in Johannesburg, we think that we are in the first world because of the two or three metros, but we remain a developing country. The last issue, Chairperson, the phraseology of what you propose in 5 under Amendment Bill, that after the application and when the proposal is not objected to, the minister or the MEC must dispose of that license. I think this is too much. Do you think every license that somebody applies, the minister, the mayor, the MEC must? We'll have to discuss this. You know, this has got the serious implications in law. Once you say it must, we'll get our legal advisors. We have got a team of legal advisors. Because once we put this, it means anywhere in the country, somebody, if he applies for a license and there's no objection, the minister should not take a decision based on the material conditions on the ground to say no, but as much as you have applied for this license, it can't be in my interest as a minister responsible that I must give you that license. We'll discuss amongst ourselves as legislators the impact of must in the legislation. Thanks, Chairperson. What we want to indicate is not that we're against the innovation in the system, but we don't want the violence that we have witnessed all over the world, and South Africa in particular. And it does not mean the other taxi operators are not welcome the innovation. But if they think that the playing ground is not leveled, we are going to have a problem. Assure us here, as legislators, that your system will not create an unfettered kind of restrictions and will not change the playing field such that the other form of taxi operators, whether e-hailing or meters, remain in the business. Us as public representatives, we serve the interests of all of you. We're not supposed to be biased. Hence, we want a system that will cater for everybody. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the comprehensive presentation. I would suggest next time that you spend more time on the actual bill instead of selling your product, because we're well aware how you function, and we would really want to prioritize your time towards us in your ideas and thinking about the suggestions around the bill itself instead of spending so much time on selling your product. I would also first like to open up with a remark, secondly, before I focus on the three questions I have. The remark is that it seems that you have focused more on the principal act than on the amendment bill, which in terms of our processes brings about a particular challenge. Although we accept your suggestions in terms of referring to the principal bill, but remember also how we work and what status a principal act has in also in relation to the amendment bill that we are currently focusing on. Nevertheless, I would like to get to your point number 2, in terms of what you refer to as the powers to impose moratorium, you are using the PAYA Act as a reference. Why are you suggesting that in particular? Why do you find that the appropriate term of reference to suggest a level of fairness in terms of the process that you suggest should be followed around imposing moratoria? Secondly, you referred to Section 8, subsection 1, around the role of the minister, and I would like to point out to you that the actual Principal Act does not refer to that status and power of the minister in a must expression, but as may. It's a prerogative, and it's not exclusively. It says very clearly the minister may. So you might have understood that differently. I do take the point in Section 8, Subsection 2, that where reference is made to the regulation made under this section may provide that any person who contravenes a provision therefore fails to comply. Definitely there it could be, the may should be considered to be changed to a must. And then my third question relates to your reference to Section 59, Subsection 3, where you made the point about the disposal of applications, where you suggest it must be disposed of. What is your experience out of that? Why are you pushing for the must there? Thank you, Jack.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will be repeating what my colleagues have already raised as a question. But I also want to welcome the presentation. Just on the definition part, I hear you want a standalone definition, not as a part of a meter taxi, so it must not be a sub, it must be on its own. You didn't quite make a case that I want to follow, that what is the reason, what's the fear of, you spoke about 4,000 in South Africa, 4,000 participants now, and when you look at a meter taxi, you're looking at a much bigger number. So e-hailing as a sub of the meter taxi as per the Act, how will it disadvantage Uber, for an example, going forward? Because if it's recognized in that way, basically it's recognized. So I just want to really just understand why you think it needs to have that full status of a standalone definition. The second question, I think it's on the moratorium issue that you've mentioned. But what I want just to understand from your presentation, why should we include or in this Act bring in a line that speaks to PAJA? Because currently, even if we don't do it, PAJA remains the Act, and anybody can take up issues in relation to that, or if they think that they are disadvantaged in terms of the operation. So the power of PAJA as a standalone Act is still stronger than bringing it here, because this Act will recognize the existence of other acts as an independent Act. So I just wanted to find out why must that provision be aligned to, because PAJA is already an existing Act. Then on the on the regulation part, I think you are making a case about the fact that a draft will be published by a minister. It should also be explicit that the MEC will follow the same route. I think the I'm sure you also understand that the regulations are more of the executive functions. They elaborate on the act as how the modus operandi and the mechanics and the bolts and nuts, that becomes a executive function. It's not so much about a legislature to make the regulations. So what I think your case here, that the MEC should do the same, you're only talking consistency, that there must be consistency. Now, if the Act prescribes a publishing of the draft regulations to by the minister, it will go the same with the, without mentioning it in the law, it will go the same route at the provincial level, because it's a one Act, so they govern by the same Act. The MEC of Transport would be complying with the Act by implementing the same way. I don't foresee it as a problem, that even if it's not mentioned here explicitly, but in terms of the functionality, that's what will happen in terms of the Act. If it compels the minister to make it public, it will go the same way to the Then on this issue about specification, there's a quick question on the specification here. I want to understand very clearly, you are asking that not exact type of a vehicle be required, and you're saying maybe the specification but not quite there. I'm not sure why you want, what is the problem with this, if you can explain it. Because ordinarily, if one apply for an operating permit, your application goes to the permit board, and they will receive it, and in receiving it, there's a consultation that goes between the municipality in terms of the planning and the needs analysis in the area. And then that application gets publicized, is advertised for comment, and by that time you, as a person who's applied, you're waiting. And once everybody accepts that there is a need for the A service, then the permit is granted to the applicant. But when the permit is granted, the upliftment of that permit is based on the car. You must provide the object, the dog, the car now on wheels. But you know that you're going to be purchasing a Toyota Sierra or whatever Kumbi, or you're buying this car, because before you do that, you have gone to search for this car. You're not flying blind, so you know what you want. So what is the problem in terms of specifying that I'm buying a Toyota 1600, or I'm buying Mac, this is the car I'm going to use for this particular, if it's a meter, or if it's a taxi, is going to be specified within those. I didn't quite get the problem with the exact problem that is experienced now. And is this a problem experienced by Uber, or are you talking in general terms? Because I didn't quite understand it. I agree on 5. If you scan all the legislations that has been made, you can pick up any. You don't see word shall or must. It's always given may, because material conditions may give authority at that point to look at that matter and still say, but we think something else must be done. Because if you say must, there is no space for authority to have a space to think differently or to do anything else, because you point to the must. The word must is the one that's going to be operative. So I don't know exactly why you feel so strong. There may be a reason that you did not explain. If you can share that with us, maybe you would be good to persuade us to in accepting it, as accepting your argument. But for now, in terms of the lawmaking process, you would find mostly it has a word may. So to give that latitude for people to be able to apply their mind. So we may not grant you the words must because of the reason I'm explaining. But maybe you must make a case for us to be able to persuade it otherwise. No, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chair. Let's just appreciate the presentation first, and probably my question, Chair, was going to be around issues of PAJA, but I think our members have just elaborated much more deeper into it. But the other thing is in relation to the issue of the guarantee that you said you'll give to the drivers who want to purchase a car, and in ensuring that even if they are in they're in debt, they can be able to be given that latitude to buy a car. I'm trying to check what kind of parameter did you manage to use in assessing that particular individual, because when a person is put into a system where it need to be, a person cannot be able to qualify for any credit, it is because of particular things that he couldn't be able to follow. How do you make sure that at the end this person pays back the money to the bank or to whosoever, the person that loaned that individual? Because if that person also doesn't comply, because it has been a tendency that even before, he couldn't be able to pay his debts. That still means we are putting our financial institutions into a bigger problem, and we may find ourselves has to rescue them again. You know, government always rescues these banks because of these kind of challenges. I mean, how guarantee do we have that we'll be able to protect that particular individual, but also the institution itself? The other thing is in relation to the safety that you also mentioned in your document. You were speaking about the safety of the passengers in terms of, you know, saving its money and everything. But I didn't hear you speaking about the safety of the passenger while the vehicle is on the motion. I'm looking this as an instance that when you go to the Cape Town Airport, there's a BP garage there. You find cars packed, queuing like nobody's business. And sometimes I ask the garage attendant there, what's happening? Are you selling cars or what? Said, no, these are Uber people. Oh, so Uber people are parking here, and I tend to have a keen interest into this. I went and engaged one. I think he's a Congolese nationality. The guy said, no, in order for us to make money, we must wait here until my phone clicks.
say, did collect a person at the airport. So, and I was asking this person, so how often do you do this? He says that sometimes we sleep here at the garage and wake up and pick up a person and go and drop it at the hotel and whatsoever. But then I'm thinking, how safe are the passengers from this one individual who sleeps at the garage, wait there until the phone clicks, you know, and give you instruction to go and pick up a client and take him there? How safe are the passengers? It really bothered me. It really worried me. Because in its own sense, Uber says operate 24 hours. And if it operates 24 hours, that still means there's no shift. I can work as much as I can, as long as I can get that instruction that go and collect a client there, that still means I'm not going to sleep. And will it be safe if I drive not being sleepy? Because the end of the day, I'm going to cause an accident. It's really a crisis that needs to be, you know, sorted out. Probably the last one is that you've mentioned that one of the challenges that you have is that you had resistance probably amongst the other meter taxis and other transport drivers. My solemnly want to understand, as you had this resistance, what were the safety precautions that you took in protecting the Uber drivers as well? Because you're an operator. But as well, you must remember, as an operator, you are putting someone else into risk. Because that person, the only thing that you want to make money. But the only way to make money is to work for you. And if he works for you, then you must be able to look how do you protect this individual. You know, when I come here in Parliament, Parliament must make sure that I'm safe. That's why you see police outside here. Much safe. So, if I'm not safe, then there's a problem. I'm just looking in terms of that. What do you look in terms of this thing? Because those are the tiny things that also matters the most. As we continue to amend this legislation, and you know, it will be able to assist us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Let me take it back to Uber. I think a lot of things have been said by honorable members. The thinking is along the same lines on the issues that you have raised on the amended bill, the amendment of the bill. To yourself, Mema Shiva.
Thanks, Madam Chairperson, and thanks to the committee for the questions. We'll alternate between ourselves in terms of the responses. Mr. Sibanda asked if we are labour brokers. We are not labour brokers. We're a technology company that owns a technology that is used within the public transport space. That technology can either be used by existing operators who choose to join the platform, or new entries onto the platform itself. The relationship that we have, as my colleague had earlier on described, is that we own the platform and then we partner with various partners. Some partners are driving for themselves. If I can give you just a sneak preview of the profile of some of the partners we have, you get unemployed youth that have finished their high school, however, have not gotten the opportunity to take themselves to tertiary, nor do they have an opportunity to be employed elsewhere. They've seen this as an opportunity for themselves. You've got an electrical engineer that has graduated, has worked for 2 years, didn't make the kind of money he wanted to make. Obviously, he's an entrepreneur in spirit. He decides to join the platform and runs his own business. You've got a woman who's been running a salon who wants to augment her business by venturing into a new business. That profile you'll find in our system as a partner. That's what we mean when we are saying we are creating economic opportunities. That's the first layer of those opportunities. These vehicles are manufactured in the country in the main. These vehicles are being serviced in the country in the main. That's part of the value chain of this, the Uber platform. Are they illegal with operating licenses? I'm not going to lie to you, Mr. Sibanda, yes and no. When Uber started, that's why we are here, there was no recognition of an e-hailing platform in the Act. What was issued to us at that time was a practice note that says this is how you're going to operate. A couple of discussions later, that practice note was rescinded. And we are asked, and it depends on the province, we are asked to then start applying for operating license. The city of Cape Town was the first one to do that. We started a process of applying for operating licenses. Gauteng province followed suit, and so did Port Elizabeth. The progress of the application of operating licenses, whether it is for Uber or for any other public transport operator, is not a quick one, unfortunately. We had challenges. We started a system having agreed with the various cities. Systems didn't work. Those systems were revised to a point where between ourselves and the city of Cape Town, we've agreed on how to then restart the process of operating licenses in the city of Cape Town. Out of the licenses that they would want to grant us, only 267, if I'm not mistaken, give or take, have been approved. And those are in the process of being uplifted by the various drivers. So it's a yes and no. Not all of them have got operating licenses. You also have metered taxis in the system that come with their existing operators. Those count as licensed operators on our system. We are hoping that if the bill gets passed as an act, that process will then be expedient because now it's recognized nationally that there is an e-hailing platform. Gauteng, we had an engagement with the various cities as well as the MEC for Gauteng. He gave us a platform to apply. We've made those applications. Those applications are in the system. They are being processed. So I hope by being honest with you, you'll understand that it is not because we chose to operate without operating license, except for the fact that at this point in time, the route to licensing is not as quick as it wanted to be, and in some areas, cities don't know whether they will offer you a charter service like Port Elizabeth has said. Port Elizabeth said to us, charter or meter taxi, but if you are running a meter taxi, there are certain conditions you have to comply with, and we are happy to do that. Gauteng said you will operate under a meter taxi, therefore all the requirements that are there to apply for a meter taxi operating license, those are the requirements that you would have to fulfill. Cape Town did the same. So I hope I've answered that question, that every city or every province has got its own ways of dealing with these applications, but in the main, it's a subcategory under meter taxi, except for Port Elizabeth. How many licenses are in each province? I've indicated, Mr. Sibanda, that in Cape Town, we're given a permission to apply for 1,035 as the first tranche, with the agreement between ourselves and the city that once that is processed, we are then going to submit the next business plan that talks about the next demand, which is slightly above 1,035. Out of those, only 267 have been processed, as I've indicated. We've had some challenges in terms of the process that we are following, but we've at least found each other now, and that process is unfolding, hopefully without any further hiccups. Gauteng, I don't know the exact number, but safe to say that we've submitted applications of just over 2,500, and that process, again, unfortunately, is now in the hands of the provincial regulatory entity in Gauteng. We shall await and see how many are being issued. What is our recruitment drive? I'd like to be honest to say that when Uber started in 2013, discussions were started with existing operators on the ground. The reception was not so positive. It then became an option of the business being open to anyone who has a vision of being in that space. Having said that, and fast forward to today, the recruitment process in the main speaks to existing operators on the platform, which is existing meter taxi. But I'm not going to lie and say everyone from the meter taxi space is coming on board. because it's part of the consultation process that I referred to earlier on to say that as recent as May, there were a lot of sparks flying between ourselves. It was an extremely violent situation. We are slowly founding each other. That is now our recruitment process. Including Taxi, where Taxi approaches us to say that we think that there's space for us in this game, but those numbers are not as high as Meter Taxi. So our intention is not to take just about everyone and anyone onto the platform. We do realize that traditionally this business has been a business for a certain group, and that is why when it comes to the processing of their applications, they are not on the waiting list. And when it comes to assistance in terms of financial support, we then offer them whatever is on the platform, whether it is a car that is being hired for a car hiring service or vehicle financing, depending on the case on the ground. Before I move from Mrs. Spander's questions, may I just ask my colleagues if there's anything they want to add? That's the first round of questions that came from Mrs. Spander. All right. Alon, if you don't mind, I'd like you to please kindly look at the legal actions on Uber International. What is the trend and what are the issues that are being raised in the main?
I mean, no one can ignore negative headlines around Uber globally. I think what we're seeing is a trend which is changing from initially pushback against Uber launching in a market to one of adoption. And the most recent example being Quebec in Canada, where at a stage Uber was on the verge of being banned from the country, but last night new regulation was announced to welcome Uber to that province. A lot of it is coming from a place to what Yulisa mentioned of not understanding the way that the platform works, with the perception of Uber being Uber or taxi, where from our perspective it's not about Uber or taxi, it's about Uber and taxi. And we're seeing a push globally, we've seen it on the African continent, where there's an adoption of ride-sharing regulation. So far less stringent than the e-hailing category which is being proposed here, but regulation which says that if you're driving to work in your own private vehicle, there is no need for you to have any form of operating license, because cities actually see the benefit of taking people, pooling them into vehicles, reducing the need for private vehicles on roads, and reducing congestion ultimately in cities. That's not what we're asking for here today, but just to give you a sense for trends globally, that is a huge trend, with statement of understanding being signed with the Minister of Transport in Ghana outlining a route to ride-sharing. Regulation in Kenya going to be tabled in Parliament for ride-sharing regulation. Nigeria approving unanimously by the House of Representatives a bill for ride-sharing. And we've seen this in multiple states in the US, we've seen it in the Philippines, and it's starting to happen across Europe and Australia. I think why do we see pushback from taxi? I think it goes to the point again that Yulisa's raised as this a sense of ownership around the industry, these individuals who've been operating for a number of decades in the industry. We did try and engage upfront with these individuals to get them on the platform. Could we have done a better job? Most definitely. I think it's something which we acknowledge and something which we're very committed to moving forward to get more and more operators onto the platform. Hopefully that addresses the questions around international context.
Okay. Thanks a lot. If I may then just jump onto, and I'm going based on our submission, and forgive me if I sound like I'm jumping around, I'd like to go to your question of a standalone. And I'd take the point of focusing more on how we operate as opposed to our submission, because we kind of took it for granted that you've got the submission and maybe we could just spend some time explaining the model. Having said that, if I just go to the e-hailing, maybe I failed to start with the first thing, which is, if it's a standalone under metered taxi as a mode, the question is, what is e-hailing? And that's what we are asking, that there seems to be a gap in the definition of actually the e-hailing platform. Forget where you insert it. So that's the main ask, to say that there needs to be that definition that says Electronic hailing or e-hailing means a hailing or pre-booking a motor vehicle operated by a holder of an operating license issued in terms of sections 51 of sections 84.842 by means of an e-hailing technology enabled application service, which, and then it lists what an e-hailing platform does. That's the first thing. Forget the mode. The second ask therefore says, if we look forward, is this the kind of system that only belongs in a metered taxi, public transport mode? And the answer is no. And this is based on our experience. This is based on KZN metered minibus taxis saying to us, in actual fact, we are running fleets on hope and prayer that the driver, when he says he's collected 1,200, indeed he has collected 1,200. If a driver says he's gone to that on that route, indeed he has gone on that route. That's example number one. Example number two is Joburg's Metrobus coming to us to say, what else can this system do for other modes other than being in smaller vehicles? So if there are such possibilities, all we are saying is that it shouldn't be that when the other modes are thinking of innovating, then the Act must be amended again. A standalone definition would then allow any public transport mode to use innovation on their system. But I hope I've answered your question, that by saying it seems that there is a gap in terms of the just defining an e-hailing platform irrespective of the mode that it is found in, but also looking forward to say that should all the other modes reconsider this kind of a system, it should be able to do that. I've already indicated that a guy who comes with a charter service that says, when times are hard on my system, you know, can I use this thing interoperably? The application allows them to use this in interoperably, but again, by having a standalone definition, we are simply saying a guy that comes with a charter service who already has a license for this vehicle, does he now have to reapply on the basis of now using innovation? But in the main, I think the first two points are the most critical one in terms of answering your question. So,
just to add a point then, I think to a point that was raised, I think the intention behind this is to ensure that there is a level playing field across all operators. By limiting it to only metered taxi as a subcategory, it potentially gives only metered taxi operators an advantage through technology not made available to other forms of transport. So the intention of this amendment is to ensure a level playing field across all operators.
On a lighter note, Madam Chair, we've also learnt that when it comes to e-hailing platforms, the focus is always on the word and the company Uber. And the truth is there's a whole host of them. So when we are saying try and pull this thing out of this one name and look at it broadly, because one day you'll find, you'll wake up and find a whole host of other e-hailing platforms that don't necessarily fall under this category as prescribed by the amendment bill. So again, we are simply saying that the world is innovating. There's a whole host of them out there. Some are even on rental cars, but you're not going to find it here. If we go to the next question, Paja, I've never studied law, but I'm going to make a great attempt as much as I can to answer this question. I think the way we looked at this, and again it's based on experience, is the fact that, again, we are saying sections 18.3 and 31B empower municipalities to impose moratoria in respect of the issuing of operating licenses. When a moratoria is placed, or moratorium rather, is placed, it does have an adverse impact on people's businesses. That much we know for a fact. I come from that environment where guys are saying, I've decided to put my minibus taxis on the road without licenses for one simple reason. It has not been communicated properly to me as to exactly why we are having a moratorium. moratorium. I take your point that PAJA is a very strong act and it's in existence and by virtue should be applying in terms of the processes of issuing operating licenses. We're simply making a case stronger to say that if the cities should decide that they want to put a hold on operating licenses, let that process be fair, let that process be open, and let whoever is being affected have a say in the process, as opposed to now being told, whether it's verbally in a meeting or in writing, that we are putting a moratorium based on the plans that we have. Sure, we appreciate municipalities have to develop integrated transport plans, but it can't be that these are the plans that they understand by themselves only when it comes to the issuance of operating licenses. And again, in the main, we're going for the pillars of PAJA, which are saying that it ensures that the administrative procedures are fair. It gives people the right to ask for reasons. It gives citizens the right to have administrative action reviewed by the courts. I'm not sure about the third one, but in the main, I'm latching on the first to say that the process needs to be fair. In practice, what I have seen is hearsay corridor talks on moratoria, something that cannot be pinned down on a particular resolution on paper. And that's all we're asking for. If it has put it stronger, or maybe it was not necessary based on the strength of PAJA, we simply are saying that process must be a fair and open process so that people's businesses which are being affected can at least have a say.
And I think just to add to that, in the same way when an operator is applying for an operating license and the onus is on the operator to prove demand for that additional operating license, if the licensing body feels that there are too many licenses for the market and a moratorium should be imposed, the onus should be on them to prove that the market is overtraded. And the public should have the opportunity, in the same way the public has the opportunity to oppose a particular operating license, to oppose the moratorium. So we just want to ensure that it's reciprocal and goes both ways.
I want to go to...
Can you respond? Chairperson, you see, I'm with a little bit concerned here. I don't know whether they are finished with their question, their responses. You're not finished with your responses. With your indulgence, let me wait for them. But I wanted to be the first to make some follow-ups.
No, Chairperson. Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there's just a few more questions to answer. The question around the... Let me go to the specifications of the vehicles. I note, and I think my colleagues note, the issue around may or must. And unless, Jonathan, you
Good morning. I think the issue around the vehicle specification is purely to avoid the situation where an operator needs to purchase the vehicle before they have been granted the operating license. In our experience, there have been cases where they need to put in the registration details of the actual vehicle that they're going to use. And obviously, in that case, you have to have the vehicle. So all we're asking for is that they can, even if it is saying, I'm going to buy a Kombi or I'm going to purchase a Toyota Corolla, that they don't have to have the actual vehicle until the operating license is granted, at which point they will have gone and done their research and then they can go and purchase the vehicle and they've got a few weeks to go and, once the operating license has been granted, uplift the vehicle and do whatever else they need to do to qualify for the upliftment.
Thanks, John. Thanks for answering that question. I was on the point of the regulations. I think we take the point of the minister may or must, and we're not going to argue that one out. But there's the last few questions that we want to take on safety, and I'd like Alon to just take us through the safety, as well as how VSP works, how do we make the payments between ourselves and Uber, and how do we guarantee that the lender has been paid.
So there are a few questions there. So I'm going to start with the one operators linked to the system complain that it ends in by impoverishing them. So I think the first point is just outlining how the fee structure works with Uber. for every trip booked on the platform, the fare is split 75% to the operator, 25% to Uber. We're talking, in the most part, even with the introduction of cash, that these payments are card-based. So what will happen? On a weekly basis, we'll aggregate the total fares completed by a partner driver. We'll deduct our service fee. We'll set off any amounts which the operator collected in cash, and we'll pay the balance over to the operator on a weekly basis. So operators on the platform receive payment weekly. So there's weekly cash flow in there, plus the cash that they collect from partner drivers, sorry, from cash trips. In terms of does the system work for everyone? I can't stand here and honestly say that everyone on the system makes a success of it. It is a business. Any individual partnering with Uber is taking on risk through that operation, as you do with any business. Uber does not tell drivers when to work or where to work. We can give suggestions as to what the best hours are, what the best areas are, and how partner drivers can maximize their earnings. But as any independent operator, you can choose to ignore that and choose to run your business in the way that you see fit. As such, some operators may not make a success of the platform. What we have seen is that we see a very small number of operators who leave the platform in South Africa. In fact, it's amongst the lowest in the world. Just given the fact that the platform does work for most operators and they do see increased earning opportunity through a partnership with Uber. I think I'm going to then link this to the point on vehicle solutions. So we take the point completely. We're not in a space where we want to create reckless lending by financial institutions. The way that the structure works, and I'm going to speak to Westbank, which is the biggest partnership. It's a 200 million rand fund, which Westbank have made available to driver partners. First of all, there is a 20 million rand underpin by Vumela, which is the guarantor to this fund. So what that means, in the event of a loss, there's a 10% underpin where Westbank, as the lender, it's a full maintenance lease, can go to Vumela and recover that first loss piece and then recover the vehicle. So what we're seeing is that the loss ratio is extremely low. It's actually performing better than their normal loan book to the general public. And it's not about reckless lending, it's about smart lending. If you look at an operator who is working for another individual, if I just use some examples for illustrative purposes, this operator could be earning 7,000 rand a week driving a vehicle that is owned by someone else. As an operator who doesn't own the vehicle, they are only going to collect a portion of those fares. If a bank looks at that individual, they're going to see them getting paid 1,500 rand a week. And they're going to then be, okay, 1,500 rand a week, this is your earning potential. You cannot afford to purchase your own vehicle. But what Westbank are doing, they're looking at this operator. They're seeing this operator driving a vehicle for another individual, but they're looking through that, they're looking past that, and they're seeing that this individual has the potential to earn 7,000 rand a week. So their earning potential is far higher than that 1,500 rand that is getting paid to them. So what is it, 7,000 rand less the expenses that they incur operating the vehicle, they're probably coming out with roughly 2,500 rand a week, so an additional 1,000 rand. So that means that they can now get access to capital off the back of their record on the Uber platform, where they actually have a much higher earning potential than that's displayed in their bank account. Why should we hold back individuals who have store credit somewhere that they maybe didn't know about from creating economic opportunity and providing for their families? So that's really the thinking behind that structure. And as I mentioned, I'm sure you could speak to Westbank directly. The loss ratio there is extremely, extremely low. John, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Okay. I think your time is already exhausted. Members are really crying about your time frame. If we can just give you a minute to summarize everything.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, I think in the 1 minute I'd like to just overemphasize the issue on safety. We do have a telematics that informs the driver when they've been on the platform for way too long. We've got a way of checking them. Because we are able to rate the driver and the rider, you have an opportunity to tell us what went wrong on that ride. Drivers are being called onto the office either for retraining or then asked to improve on their services. In the main, Chairperson, we actually are very grateful for being given an opportunity to just make our submissions verbally, because I think it's clarified half the things that we have submitted. We are in no way saying that we want to be treated differently from any other operator or technology in the space. All we are saying is that we just be seen as a net contributor in the space. We just be seen for what we are. We are trying to improve the way people move. We are trying to improve the public transport space, and we are part of the ecosystem. Thank you very much.
You want to be treated very special, don't you worry. Honorable TSQ, can I speak?
Thank you. Chairperson, through you, you see, I understand that public hearings is just public hearings. But I would discourage, whereby we encourage or give opportunity to people who are running a game with the people who doesn't comply. Because in South Africa we talk about compliance. No wonder why most of the taxi operators are so, you know, bitter about this arrangement. You see, Chairperson, why I'm raising that, when I ask a question, they respond with trying to mild to say we are assisting youth, a person from the saloon may want to increase his salary, unemployed, what. No, that is not a fact. I'll put inside one of my colleagues also indicated that instead of Uber looking around of the amendment of the bill, they look how to market themselves. This is not a platform to market yourself, no. And again, out of thousands of operators under Uber, yet around only 267 were licensed. No, that is not accepted. And before I end, Chairperson, you know, this thing remind me as something which is very separate, but nearly like this. There was a time where some people were marketing AZT tablet. Everybody was so vocal. But what happened? Quiet. Nothing happened. Up until it went off. Nobody speak about it anymore. It's worrying me the same. Because no compliance. I think the question which was raised by Honorable Khateb, you left one thing. You were quite right. We can make an example, whereby here in Western Cape, sometimes the way it's so dangerous, some of the people, they can't speak even a local language, who are running under this Uber, waiting for to be called. Foreign people, we respect foreign countries. I can't from here go to America and do what I like. I follow the laws of America. But here, they don't. Even foreign people, very dangerous situation, waiting there. You will find them waiting for the people, waiting for the call. Somebody is calling them to come and pick up some people, of which it makes some conflicts with the taxi associations. We talk about license, we talk about compliance. Not to give anybody a license, we're not interested for any business which is illegal. We're interested with business which are illegal. With a license. Without the license, I don't compromise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ross Pande. Thank you very much, Uber, for your presentation. We'll now take the next slot, which is the Uber Drivers Guild. We request that Aram Singer.
Sorry, Chair, you're not well positioned to observe anyone that wants
apologies,
to.
Apologies,
but Could you please, from your position as a chair, just also ask our presenters and further presenters not to participate in clapping hands, since we are politicians and we respond to applause in a very particular way. So if you could just remind everybody what we are here for. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Singer. We are requested not to clap hands. We are not in a rally. We are in a portfolio committee meeting. So therefore, we understand that you celebrate when they raise your point that makes you happy, but there's no point of clapping hands. We are not giving awards. No, we are not giving awards. No. We are dealing with legislation, not awards. The Uber Presenters Guild, Kate, can they come and present? Use the technology that is called the mic there.
Okay, thank you. Greetings, Chairperson, members of the committee, fellow South Africans. I think it's very important that we first of all understand exactly what is Uber before we talk of legislation. And we are happy to speak facts from the ground other than people who speak from the computer.
Just one quick one. Members of Uber are allowed to remain if they so feel. To listen to the presentation, but we thought that maybe you'll be having the presentation that you'll be making besides the one that we received. I don't know if you've got.
We don't have that. We do have like facts of the things that we experience, because we are currently the people that are working on Uber, driving every night and day, and we're experiencing challenges in Uber, and we feel that it's very important that we take this opportunity to come and give you an insight of exactly what is happening in Uber before you talk of regulating Uber.
It's okay, you can continue, but make sure that you stick to your time that is given.
Thank you. So we are happy with this opportunity here to disclose the challenges we face on the Uber platform in our country. Many of you are not aware, but we would deal with them and recommend what would be right and fair for everyone living in this country for the benefit of all.
Let me interject. Remember when I started, I said you must introduce the team that you're with.
You introduce yourself,
you introduce the team that you're with for the records.
Okay.
And also for us to be able to interact properly with you.
Thank you. So I am Joseph. I'm the head of communication in the Uber Drivers Guild. So I've been working on the Uber platform as a driver for the past 2 years. And we are experiencing so many challenges. And so as drivers, we decided to unionize, and I represent a group of about over 750 drivers. And with me here is my deputy, Cliff Weston. He's also a member of the Drivers Guild, and he's also a driver on the Uber platform. And on my right, it's my fellow comrade, Valenja Peters. She is our secretary in the Uber Drivers Guild. So if you may allow me to continue. So many of you are not aware, but below we detail them and recommend what will be right and fair for everyone living in this country for the benefit of all and those who live in it, and not a few elite. Our gatekeepers have allowed Uber to operate in the country in the name of employment creation and economic empowerment in our beloved South Africa. It is indeed our country, our God-given land, and this isn't a debatable fact. We, however, are of the view that in our land, in this work environment, we are being exploited and made flat. This troubles us daily and should worry all of you too, especially on the back of our fallen comrades, those in hospitals and the dark future of our lives tomorrow. We are slaves in our land and it's not acceptable any longer. We are calling for a full review. We are submitting on the BA and also wish to call on the law to make sure that the rich and the poor all benefit so that we can reduce the massive financial difference amongst our people, which in our view creates the deep hatred countrywide considering the regrettable history of the land. So we are here to deal with the e-hailing section of the bill, a part of the bill which we strongly feel we are better placed to contribute since we work in the structure. We will start by defining the slave ship Uber. Uber is a European company founded by a very much controversial CEO, Travis Kalanich, and its financial management internationally is done by Gupta. Yes, that's right. Gautam Gupta is the chief financial officer at Uber with previous working records at Goldman Sachs. This company created a platform that allows partners,
partner drivers and riders to meet each other and take rides together. Interestingly, this company's influence just doesn't end there on providing the platform. They exert a lot of influence over us. They make decisions unilaterally. We are not allowed to propose our ideas. We don't even vent our frustrations. They've got 99% economic power over us and make policies that affect our life and continue to do so adversely. Yet they claim they are a service provider and we are independent contractors. Under such circumstances, we're suffering and we believe we'll continue if our lawmakers doesn't closely look at this monster called Uber. A lot of European companies and other countries in the world have banned Uber. And why do you think they have? Uber is dealing with a lot of court cases. Currently worldwide, including the US, exactly where it comes from. In the UK too. Why do you think so? There is no Uber in Germany. There is no Uber in Spain. Two main cities in India, Uber has been banned. In Italy, in Abu Dhabi, to name a few. Because they've noticed and learned that this company is, wait for it, it's a scam, and the breakdown below sums it up. Currently on the structure, we are called partners. So I'm dealing with partnership. So we've been fooled by this company into believing that we are in partnership. Yet we are not involved in decision-making process at all. We all know what a partner is. Uber drivers aren't. There is no such partnership on Uber. We have been fooled. Then one has to think of how this name came about. It says a lot. Read even their email. It says partnerscapetown@uber.com. Now I'm dealing with the presentation by Uber to government before they were allowed to operate in the country. So on the 6th of June, as Uber Drivers Guild, we met Chief Lawmaker on Transport, Mr. Yasir Ahmed, and we asked to know what was the presentation by Uber and whether they are fulfilling those. We asked him if Uber was doing what they have agreed, and if not, is government following up on that? Surge pricing, cash payment has been since implemented in the country, while Mr. Yasir Ahmed told us that government was clear to Uber on what they can do and not. Uber did what they are known to do best. They disregard the rule of law and breach agreements. This does not surprise us, considering it's run by Gupta, who has work experience at Goldman Sachs. So strangely, the provincial government is reluctant to intervene immediately citing sensitive talks and telling us Rome was not beaten one day, while our comrades on the road are being robbed and being killed. We've approached so many government officials, and everyone throws the towel. Why? Have they been captured? In our unobscured view, we think government has failed us as our gatekeeper by allowing Uber to operate. Something will be done, and it needs to be done now. Comrade Webb Law has died. Comrade Charles was banned, and more than 10 hijackings has been reported in the country. Then I'm dealing in quite a very strange term. I attended the Premier League. So from the beginning, we've been told getting a ride works with close proximity, depending on where I am as a driver and where a trip emanates from. So if I'm closer than the others, I get a beep on my smartphone for the ride. But now we say Uber representative cars on the system, otherwise they must prove us wrong. They've allowed their friends to own a fleet of cars. We've got people who own 70 cars on Uber. Algorithms of the application are manipulated to favor the Premier League. If you're not a member of the Premier League, you don't get trips, or otherwise you get stripes. Bear in mind, the agreement with the city was 5 cars each person, and Uber doesn't comply, and the city does nothing at all. This is unethical business practice, and it must be stopped. Let me give an example of what I'm talking about with this Premier League and when you get a ride on Uber. So I'll be having my phone here, and the client will be requesting from there. And while I'm sitting here, I've been here for 3 hours. There's no work. A trip comes. In fact, when someone requests for a trip on the Uber app, it says the pickup location, it says it sets the destination. Now what Uber is doing, Uber is now manipulating the algorithms of the application to favor certain people. So there is people that befriended themselves with Uber that has got 70 cars each person. And the city was very clear, because Mr. Yasir Ahmed says so. Each person can only have 5 cars. What now Uber is doing is, instead of me getting that ride because I'm close by, that ride now is given to someone who owns a car that belongs to the Premier League, and I don't get anything. What do I get as a person? So our usual people out there, they are suffering. I get a trip that involves a long trip, a long dispatch and a short trip. I'll be getting a trip while I'm Bristol. I go to Tamboslu. I burn my car, my fuel, all up the mountain. I get there, I sit, I wait for a client for 5 minutes. And then the person goes back to Bristol, where I'm coming from. Does that make sense? It doesn't. While where I was, someone was going to Stellenbosch, and that trip is not going to be given to me, and is given to someone else who belongs to the Premier League. That's unethical, and that is to be stopped. So we'll deal with our safety. Our lives are in danger. Uber has broken its promise because of the introduction of cash trips. I've got an email with me here that states clearly from Uber that says their commitment to safety, they'll always make sure that Uber will be cashless. So when I joined Uber, We were told Uber works cashless. There is no cash. But 2 years down the line, Uber implemented cash.
Can you try and summarize? Do you see a time that is almost today? Just I'm giving you another 2 minutes, 3 minutes, so that you summarize your input.
We as drivers are vetted. Our criminal background checked through our fingerprints, the drivers and partners, and our riders are not.
If you can just hold it, Honorable Ramakaka.
Chair, I'm struggling to follow the presentation, and I apologize to do this. I am reading the notes, and I'm trying to make them connect to the bill before us. What I get, it's matters that supposed to be dealt with outside of this forum. So I'm not quite sure how to proceed, because the voluntary arrangement that I entered into with the drivers and Ubers and drivers in terms of the applications is not that we is before us. What is before us is the amendment of the bill as it suggested. Now, I don't know if there isn't anything about the bill.
We do have something about the bill, if I may answer that. So we are trying to deal with the two clauses, and the second of the clauses, it amends Section 8 of the Act to empower the Minister to make regulations on a number of additional issues, which includes regulations on the process of negotiating with incumbent operators to establish contracts for integrated public transport networks, regulation providing for the needs of target categories of passengers, and regulations on code of conduct for operators and drivers of public transport vehicles. Some consumer amendments are also made to that section. So the detailing that we're trying to do, and first of all, is we've asked that I don't think we'll be able to perhaps speak about legislation if you don't understand exactly what are we dealing with. So in our view, we feel that we need to understand exactly what is Uber and whether they do have us at heart or...
We will keep on interjecting, because at the center here is that we would want to amend the legislation as given. And the Honourable Musinga would like to make some inputs.
Thank you for your presentation. And you have got a particular experience that you share with us in a very particular way, with references to Premier League and Guptas and also. That's your unique experience. And it's important, it's your environment, and it causes a discomfort to you, and we've got great understanding for that. We are in the process of considering a certain dispensation that would in a great way be able to support your good or bad experience. And it's therefore important that you supply us with, unfortunately, a rather technical approach to what you've described now in sometimes a very emotional way. Because in a way we need to design something that would on the one side accommodate business growth, economic development and so forth, but also safeguard a very particular other economic form. So that's what legislation is there for, and that's what good legislation is there for, to maintain that very particular balance. And that's what you have the opportunity for. So if I could request you to just talk about what's good, what should be protected, what's bad, but then in a way that helps us and assists us to then be able to write good legislation. That's your opportunity.
Okay. Thank you. So
just one moment. I think what you're raising, normally as a committee, we always allow public to come and present their issues, which we believe are the issues that we should deal with, and make recommendation to Parliament outside of this process that we are engaged in, which is to amend the law. We are here in a process of making sure that we amend the law, and that is why members are just concerned to say, obviously, this concerns. We would want you to still make submission to the committee secretary and say, these are the challenges that we would like to come and talk to the committee on, so that we're able to deal with those issues. How I wish they could have come before the amendment of this NLTA bill, so that those who are the bill drafters are able to maybe look into it. We as lawmakers can only be able to assist you to this far. But at the moment, we're focusing at this law that must be amended, which is before us, in terms of the sections, in terms of the clauses, in terms of the subsections, such that when you say, I was happy you spoke to the regulations, when you say the regulations, you are able to say, these are the deficiencies in terms of the regulations, these are the good things in terms of these regulations, and then we are able to take it from there, because as members, we will interact and interrogate most of the issues like we have been doing to Uber here. And that is why the preamble by other members was such that you are coming to sell your business here. We are more interested in how this act can be amended. That is what was being said to Uber. Even yourself were saying, we're noting the challenges that you're speaking to, but let those challenges come, a request be made to the committee so that we can be able to focus on these issues that we are raising as a standalone, not the issues which actually will affect our work as we are dealing with the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought Uber, in the beginning, they were afforded an opportunity to present themselves in before they started talking about the bill, and I thought we were afforded the same opportunity as well, because I think they sort of wanted to even market themselves in Parliament. And what we're trying to do is, we're trying to give you an insight of exactly what we're experiencing on Uber, since Uber was also given that opportunity, and we also afforded that opportunity, and then we can go back to the two sections that you're trying to amend in line with what we've spoken about. Because I think, in my view, it is very important that people understand exactly the challenges of what we are about to regulate in the country. This is a company that I think, in my own view, in my 2 years experience working on Uber, it doesn't benefit anyone except for the few alive. So that's why, hence, our suggestion in line with the bill is to say, I think this needs to be completely reviewed at all, because we're not making money. We've got people dying on the road every day, and Uber says, there's nothing we can do when you are independent contractors.
Exactly that. Honourable members have gone through your presentation, and we're trying to get your intervention in terms of the proposals that you are making to amend the law. We've gone through the presentation. That is why members now are saying we want you to zero in through what you believe should be the presentation, the amendments, because your presentation doesn't have any amendment, to be honest. It doesn't have, unless maybe you have written down it's not here in the presentation. Listening to you, we're going to give you the next 10 minutes for you to be able to deal with the issues. No, we should be fair. Give them, because they're coming to sell themselves here. Let's give themselves the coming 10 minutes for them to sell themselves, but at the same time, we expect you to say, these are the intervention as you are amending the law. We believe that as operating, what is that? The guild. As the guild, this is what we believe we want to make an input, because it is very important that as members of the community must make inputs into this law so that this law can be a very good law.
Thank you, Chairperson. So the amendments of the 2.2 clause amendment of Section 5 of Act 5 2009, it is amended to require the Minister to promote measures to ensure safety of pedestrians and passengers by means of regulations, guidelines and other measures. So the second clause, that's not on the presentation. We have submitted a written submission to the Secretary, PCU Secretary on Transport, I'm sure that's last month. So dealing with these two clauses, we felt that it is very important that we give you an insight of exactly what we as drivers are experiencing on the Uber platform. So if you may allow me to carry on in that 10 minutes. So on our safety issues, I was saying our lives are in danger and Uber has broken its promise because of the introduction of cash trips. Their promise has been very clear, and I'll ask my deputy to quote the promise in an email dated 29 January 2015, but I won't do that any longer. So we as drivers have vetted our criminal background, checked through our fingerprints as drivers and partners, and our riders are not. We have since called on the giant multi-billion company to review this decision, and they shut us out at the office. We are now falling victims to our riders because they now do not have to break houses to steal a car. One simply have to create a bogus account. It takes only 3 minutes. Request an Uber driver, not knowing where the poor man or woman is going, goes and pick up the rider. They take you to any place where you may get killed or robbed. Yet it's business as usual, and we say, oh no, an injury to one is an injury to all. A case similar to what is being emphasized is Open Fishu, where Comrade Washington experienced such a tragic incident. Do you know why Uber is business as usual? Because they can get another driver. We are simply easily replaceable in this work environment. This is a company that's got nothing except for an application. They've been here for over 3 years, yet they keep on recruiting drivers every 2 days in a week. Which company do you know that employs workers daily? Why is it happening after 3 years of establishing such a powerful application? Once you start asking these questions, you get deactivated. And the word is, if you're not happy, join one's work. If you experience an accident as a driver and you need medical and financial assistance, they tell you you are an independent contractor, sorry, Uber cannot help. Meanwhile, the partner who owns the car writes into Uber to say, my insurance replaced the vehicle, how can I get a driver? A new list of drivers being sent to the partner to say, choose one driver from that list. So what have we become in this company, in our land? We are called partners. Yet we make them what they are. They are in our lens. We are replaceable. We don't have a say in the company. So the question is, what are we? To me, that's the definition of slavery. Talking of the Uber contract, or the so-called addendum, we are not allowed to unionize as workers while Uber is testing driverless vehicle in the United States already. By the time we finally managed you, there's already driverless cars. They do not need us anymore. Meantime, if you organize and unionize, you are victimized. You don't get trips, or even you deactivate indefinitely. This is a breach of what is enshrined in our constitution. We have a right of freedom of association as workers. Do you know why they don't want us to unionize and the epic deal with us individually? Because they don't want us to become powerful in our numbers. Another question worth asking, what's wrong with Uber allowing drivers and partners to come together if they know their business practice is above board? So regulations and their relationship with the city. The city's Brett Herren has come out in public and said Uber is in violation of its agreement by implementing cash trips, adding more illegal vehicles, which has saturated the market, making it difficult for us on the ground to make money. Question, what happens if someone has broken the law? Certainly there's consequences. The city is reluctant to deal with decisively with Uber. One wonders if no city officials got cars on the Uber platform, which raises eyebrows. We allege that there's collusion between Uber and the city at the expense of the suffering masses. The Uber officer right here in Cape Town at Greenpoint at number 74 Prince Street. We have already Ubered Helen Zille and the general manager, Jonathan Ayache. We have known from a member of the PRE, Mr. Siame, that Uber violated the agreement in the meeting held on the 6th of June at the Atlan offices. But up to today, prices are surging, cars without payments continue to be applauded. Isn't this the resolution of duty by the city? While Helen Zille takes enjoyable rides in Uber GM, our question is, if the late Comrade Webb Law is related to Helen Zille, certainly, as premier of the city, she should have taken steps to remedy the situation. But because it's us, it's fine. Rome was not built in one day. All partners and drivers of Uber have applied for permits to operate in the system. Strangely, the city is now mandating Uber to take over the applications. How does that happen without consulting us? That's undemocratic. We started these and should be allowed to finish those. Uber is exactly doing what their CFO, Gautam Gupta, has been doing, based at Goldman Sachs, lobbying officials, but we trust strongly in our law. That's why we are participating today. Uber has been allowed a certain number of cars. The city has provisioned for 1,034 cars, but Uber has got only, if not, I'm sure, 371 cars that has got permits. But they've added more cars without permits. They continue to disregard the law of this country, and still nothing happens to them. From 134 to over 3,000 cars in Cape Town, that's a big number. But the interesting question must be, why is this company so stubborn and nothing happens? Clearly, they've got a backing of an influential political head. Who is that person? Who compromised our law for personal gain, only for himself or herself in a country that has got millions of people? Also, as a result of this conduct, the market is saturated. We can't make money at all, and so is our taxi brothers and sisters. And while Uber is shipping money out of the country, this slave ship needs to be stopped, as has been done in other countries. Even the UN refused to partner with Uber on the EV project. Someone has got to stop this and save the people. It is you, our lawmakers.
that can do so. I would deal with the prejudicial pricing and our relation with our Czech brothers and sisters. Uber arrived in the country 3 years ago. We've been told it operates strictly on EFT. Uber requires partners to have a car that's not older than 4 years, must be comprehensively insured, have a tracker, and they've got, and they take 20-25% on the ride with you. Bear in mind, you carry all the expenses, and theirs is only take their percentage. We as partners incur data costs on the application, calling clients, we rate fines on the road, insurance fuel as it keeps going up, maintenance to name a few. What it also mentioned that we do have our own racial issues in the country, as drivers get racial abuse by clients, all this for 700 kilometers. Where is profit here? How is this employment creation, and yet we are called partners? I mean, the CEO of Travis Kalani is on record in an article saying he believes in an election campaign whereby the candidate is a taxi. We don't believe it that way. These are our tax brothers. These are our brothers. They are in the country to live as well. We see this as unfair competition and creates a deadly tax war, which you all know how bad it can be, as is happening at the moment. The lawyers protect our traditional tax brothers. We love them. We don't want to undercut them because we are doing so at the moment. And this is creating unnecessary tensions and requires state resources like police deployments when this noise erupts, as it happened recently in the country. Uber works on offshore accounts, and we allege they don't pay tax at all, while they work exploiting us 7 days and seven nights, since they operate at all times. All partners and drivers are grown-up men. We do have kids who goes to school, and in this mode we can't sustain this employment because he has to call upon for a full review. Uber drivers are doing long driving work, long driving hours to at least make enough for petrol. But then again, the boats get tired and our comrades get involved in fatal accidents because the 7 land is unbearable. We feel this is to drive the competitors out, and it's unfair. It must be investigated. Competition is to be about service and not the tariff. Our tax brothers and sisters are angry with Uber, and we stand with them in solidarity. They are also in their country to work and be able to make money to feed their families. Let's make sure that the law protects everyone who lives in the country, and in an event of a violation, as in having a traffic fine, if one has, there's a day to pay or to appear in court. In this case, there seems to be no consequence to Uber in all violations of law and agreements. Why? We really need to be careful with European companies. They do not have us at heart. I'm going to deal with data collection quickly in a minute. This is an industry which we can strongly argue that it be owned and run by foreign companies without proper regulation by government. We call on government to nationally regulate Uber or be banned from operating in the country. Government can make its own app which we can use, and we pay 20 or 25% to the country. Uber has violated laws and agreements since day one. If they do not comply, they must leave. It's that simple. Actually, we're of the view that a company collects such an amount of data where our people go and on what day of the week must strictly be monitored. With the rise of terror worldwide, this is a concern. Also, we call upon the Department of Safety and Security to monitor the data collection done by Uber. A research cites that in Africa, the world's poorest continent is being further impoverished and exploited by the rest of the world. It is found that 134 billion flows into the continent each year, mainly in the form of loans, foreign investments and aid. However, 192 billion is taken out, mainly in profits made by foreign companies and tax dodging. The result is that Africa suffers a net loss of 58 billion a year. We need to radically rethink the notion that Uber and other European companies are empowering African countries. If unchallenged and governed, we have a massive problem in this country and continent. That would be failure on your part as our lawmakers, on people that you serve. This is a command that does not create employment and develops no one economically at all, except to benefit themselves and a few alike through this tax dodging business model. Our affirmation is this simple. Is Uber creating employment? Black economic empowerment, when 90% of people are owned by a white minority, what is the blacker preventing from owning a single car? Because they do not qualify for loans from banking institutions to purchase a car, which is not older than 4 years. Presenting themselves to government as for the previously disadvantaged people, knowing full well what car they will require to operate, Uber knew exactly who are they empowering and targeting. Can you think of any person from Nyanga, Gugletu, and Kailisha who affords a car that's not older than 4 years? This is a command that says, we empower the less privileged people. But clearly they knew exactly that they would say, for anyone to sign up on Uber, you have to have a car that's not older than 4 years. Which person do you think from Nyanga or Kailisha holds such a car? It's impossible. So these are people that, like I'm saying, 90% of people that own cars on Uber, they are all white. Rich people, they don't drive the car, we do the driving. A brand don't know exactly what happens in Uber. If you drive night and day for 7 days, say for example you make 8,000, the partner says, this is my car, this is my contribution, I want 3,000 from you whether you make money or not. We are saying they are lying with the figure that they've shown there. There's over 4,000 cars, illegal cars, in Cape Town. 371 has been legalized. The rest is illegal. Where does Uber get that authority from? If you make 8,000 and your partner wants 3,000 as the owner of the vehicle, and you have got a petrol expense to drive the partner's money and Uber's 25% and your money as well, that's about 2,000. You're left with how much? You're left with nothing. So we're not making anything, and we're calling upon you to regulate this company. So the two recommendations for us is to make sure that Uber is nationally regulated or else Uber doesn't operate at all in the country. It's that simple. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You see, as you were going through, there's a number of recommendations that you could have made in terms of the amendment of certain sections. Because when you're talking to oversaturation, when you look at contracting and other related matters, they will be able to deal with the issue that is a challenge to you of oversaturation. When you talk to the issues of data, there is also the proposal that other people have made, including Uber, which is talking to e-hailing in general, not Uber only, but e-hailing in general, because we're living in a world of cyberspace. How do we regulate this cyberspace? How do we legislate against these issues of the cyberspace? So that is why we're saying somewhere, you've got it right, but how you were able to put your things, this is a learning curve for you. Next time when you come, you will be able to say, section this, these are the things that we are seeing. Because as you are reading, we as legislators are able to see that, oh, this one falls under this, this one is going to this. So that is why we're making a fuss out of the whole thing, because we expect people who come here to say, we want amendment of this section or this subsection or this clause. That is how we do it. But we're happy. It's a learning curve. Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Umsinga, Honorable Sibande, Honorable Ramatlakana, Honorable Khade.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I listened very carefully to the presenter, and thank you for his presentation. And I'm trying to link it back to this bill and what we're trying to achieve. And I appreciate and understand the issues, but I sense this is the wrong forum. I'm not just discarding the issues that were presented, and I don't know if the issues have been presented to the leadership of Uber. It's a great opportunity, because they're in the room at the moment, for them to perhaps address it with them. But I'm sorry to say, I listened very carefully and I actually tried to extrapolate some issues that we can incorporate into the bill, and I couldn't find it. I'm very sorry. So I just suspect this is the wrong forum. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. You definitely executed your mandate. So you can go back to your membership and say you said what you were mandated to do here. However, in terms of making an impact in a contribution, in a constructive way, to change what you feel unhappy about, you were not that successful. Now I want to motivate you to study the Act, to go to the Amendment Bill, to work through the National Land Transport Bill, and to find alignment with the unhappiness that you experience and the ways that this bill can contribute to, in a way, absorb and find balance between the different spheres of economic growth and development that we want to have in the country. And then put that on paper and contribute in that manner. I see this as a missed opportunity and a big waste of time. This is certainly not a complaints department. We are serious about our objectives in doing proper work, and you must assist us in that way. But the opportunity is not lost, so thank you for your time and effort in seeing and participating, and with what you've gained here in terms of approach and appropriateness and also making input and meaningfulness, put that on paper and contribute to our process, because your input is valuable to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I won't have many, many questions, but only a few comments. Number one, not to say they are so wrong, they're quite right. Because of in South Africa, we are having this approach of community arrest.
If the community sees something wrong, don't keep quiet. No matter the platform today is not strategic for that. But you are quite right. Keep it up with that spirit. Because we are legislators here, but we might not know some of the things which are happening. Then again, Chairperson, by saying that, another comment, you know, if it was a school, a purpose or school platform, I was going to say, thank you very much, keep it up to expose a fly-by-night school. And then again, Chairperson, I wanted you to find out that when you were recruited to join Uber, did you understand the terms and conditions in terms of their work, legality, and safety? Did you know anything? And then secondly, because Uber, earlier on when they were reporting, they gave us a picture that they are having a program of continuity or ongoing education, that they educate their people, they bring them time and again to educate them. Number three, among yourself, in your group, have you have an operating licenses or do you operate illegal as well? Lastly, Chairperson, is that I will request them that they must continue, maybe make a proposal, because it came in their input whereby they had a problem if not allowing an e-bill. What will be your alternative in order to supplement on what we have requested in terms of the amendment of the bill? What will be your, I don't mean now. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. The first issue, I just want to say that on the letter that was submitted on the 28th, we would look at those two clauses that I mentioned when we consider the bill, the issue about the amendment on the regulations and all that. That we will take into account in the process of looking at the bill and amendment. That's I think the comment I want to make in the first. I think that, Chair, it is a missed opportunity. The guild should have pay more attention to the process, and I'm not necessarily saying right or wrong, but this is not a labor department nor a labor committee that looks at the condition of employment, whether they are fair, whether they are in compliance with the basic condition of employment, and. This is a committee to transport to look at the bill. And I think the forum that has been, this is a mess directed to a forum that is a transport. Perhaps some of the issues that deals with conditions and unhappiness could be dealt with at the committee labor department or committee, portfolio committee that deals with the department. I don't see tomorrow or the day after tomorrow that we can resolve the relationship issue on business terms between the various people that are entered into agreement outside this room and becomes the arbiter of that. This is all joy, voluntary participation, etc., etc. I don't see, Chair, I know you mentioned that we can have this discussion, but I don't know what powers we're going to have to deal with what has been presented to us. if the matter of crime that has been committed, they are processed to report such a matter. Now there's a whole lot of issue about investigation. Now we can't activate an investigation. The guild, when they smell such thing, they should be able to take the appropriate forum for that investigation. So I just want to suggest, Chair, that I think that for me, that's where we end the subject. I think that's where we end the subject. The two part of the clauses, we would then deal with it in terms of the amendment. The rest should go to an appropriate forum. It's not this for this forum.
No comments.
Thank you very much. I think there were specific questions which were asked by Honorable Sibande to yourselves, which actually would request you to respond to. Joe?
With regards to whether Uber explained to us about safety and the legalities and if we have got operating licenses, I must say, of all, if not all of 750 people that we have in our guild, no one, including myself, has got an operating license. And I've said to you, I've been working for 2 years. And to be honest, with when I started working for Uber, the right term that I can use is to say I was baited to come on the system, because I was told that these rosy figures of I'll be able to make 10,000 a week, and these guys knew exactly what they're doing with me. I jumped on the platform. We were, I think, not more than 70 drivers when I started working. You were making that money, but I didn't even know before we approached government that the surge pricing that allows us to make money is illegal. Even right now, if I go outside there, if there's no cars in an area, price surges, and that's illegal. The city was very clear. The PRI was very clear to Uber, but that's what you know of Uber. That's why the controversy about Uber everywhere in the world. They disregard the law every day. From day one, they did that. So CEPIT was not explained to me, there was no contract at all. The contract that was imposed to us, it was imposed to us all drivers early 2015, after Uber has lost about a number of lawsuits, 5 lawsuits in America. So when they lost those lawsuits, they designed the contract. Not a contract that is to be favorable for both of the role players. It's to protect themselves from further lawsuits in South Africa. So there was no legalities, there was no contract when I started working. A contract came a year later when Uber lost, because they were saying to us, we don't need to have permits to work on Uber because Uber is as good as requesting your neighbor to take you to the airport. Now, a year later, Uber lost that battle from within government and they imposed us with contract. If I show you that contract, it's sort of an American-based contract. It doesn't even favor me, it favors themselves. It's there to protect themselves. And one of the things that it stipulates, you are not allowed to unionize, which is against our very constitution in South Africa. So that's what I'm happy to say. No legalities were explained. Safety, we are not safe. There is cash payment now. A rider can come and request you in cash, take you to wherever they take you. We've got people dying. We've got a guy who was banned. We've got someone who was ejected yesterday. Uber says they've got measures in place. They've got nothing. There's nothing that they're doing to secure us. And we don't have license. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Rabatakana, earlier on when I was saying that probably they may need to come back so that we are able to discuss certain things. I was specifically referring to issues like he mentioned, the they are operating illegally, as to how do we deal with this type of a situation. But that is also covered in the bill, because we're talking to issues of contracting which actually are delayed. Since 2009, provinces, municipalities, national government has been talking to issues of contracting which actually are delayed. When you look at the amendments, they also still talking to the issues of contracting, which makes a lot. Not only do you find yourself as Uber, operating illegally, even mini taxis, meter taxis, because there is a delay in government in terms of dealing with the contracting issues. But the overall relations with between yourself and Uber, the contract that you have signed with Uber, they belong to the Portfolio Committee on Labour. If you are able to structure again the presentation that you are able to go to the Portfolio Committee on Labour and speak to most of the issues that you have raised here, they definitely will be able to assist in that regard. Ours is focusing on transport and transport-related matters. You spoke to issues of safety. You spoke to a number of things which we believe belongs to us here in the Portfolio Committee on Transport. Thank you very much. Like I indicated earlier when I started the meeting, this is a journey which starts with one step into 1,000 and other steps that we are going to be making. We're going to be going into the next presentation, which will be made by the South African Meter Taxi Association, and Mr. Baka will be the presenter. Mr. Baka, let me request you to introduce the team that you have come with and start with your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'm here representing SAMTA, South African Meter Taxi Association. I'm here by myself. I'm the Cape Town representative for the body. So I've assumed that all of the members have received a copy of our submission. So in our submission, we also speak about Uber. So the term Uber is used, well, it's been the biggest bane in the e-hailing space. So when people refer to the dominant player in the market, it refers to the whole industry, and there have been, as they've admitted, other players who've tried to come into industry, but not as successful as they have done. So from our side, as SAMHSA, we've, you know, our concerns regarding the disruptive technologies that have been, with regards to the e-hailing apps, specifically Uber, the illegal operations and what they've done in the industry. You know, industry has taken pain. So in our submission, we just like to say that with regards to this e-hailing apps, us as an industry, there are 2,500 jobs roughly, you know, be it from drivers to ancillary services, workshops, wash bays, call center staff, that are jobs are in jeopardy. So in terms of the current NLTA, 80% of Uber and e-hailing drivers are illegal, with limited action being taken. That being said, in the current dispensation of the NLTA, Uber should not even have been allowed to operate, and they have been operating illegally. So they put the cart before the horse, and it's similar to me applying for a gun license and going on using my gun before I even am authorized to do so. That's what they've definitely done. So we object to the proposed amendments of the NLTA which are before you here today, which relate to the meter tax and refer to e-hailing applications without the physical meter, which is a key thing for us, is the physical meter. If these amendments are passed, South Africa will be flooded with unregulated private vehicles transporting the public for reward, which is when you're transporting someone for reward, someone is paying you to take them somewhere, be it your neighbor, your brother, your cousin, your mother. If you're paying the person, you're transporting for reward. Thousands of local South African jobs and businesses will be lost. In addition, we have not been consulted on these amendments with reference to how they will affect the future of the meter taxi industry. We acknowledge Uber and e-hailing services have become a fact of life. These services need to be regulated, but not in a way that will destroy existing meter taxi infrastructures. We require Uber and all other e-hailing services abide by us, or we would like, by the same rules and regulations that meter taxis are required to conform to. They must refrain from proliferating without operating license or permits and must be subjected to the same restrictive permit requirements we in the industry have been required to abide by for the past 70 years. In addition, they must refrain from undercutting prices which force other companies and other individuals out of business while they run at losses to capture marketplace. So for us, we see the need for technology. The industry as a whole is a bigger circle. Technology should not encompass the industry. It should fall into the industry and be part of the circle and not be the circle. So with technology in every industry, we wouldn't be sitting here today speaking in a mic if it wasn't for technology. We object to the following clauses in the amendment bill. Page 4, section D and C, in reference to section 1 of Act 5 of 2009, an electronic hailing application using a smartphone is not a taximeter in terms of international and national standards for the following reasons. A smartphone app cannot be sealed, i.e. it's open to be tampered with. Therefore, the kilometer price can be increased and decreased at a whim. And this is evident as the surge price specific with Uber applies during peak periods. Surge price in the meter taxi industry is legal, is an illegal business practice. So for us to change a meter, you need to apply to the correct authorities in order to do that. And currently with these e-hailing apps, they do it at the click of a button. Furthermore, we recommend that EAL applications are required to be used together with a sealed meter within a regulated meter taxi industry, which limits the number of cabs operated under each company's banner. If Uber is going to be legalized as a meter taxi, we require national consultation that entire meter taxi industry and limit the number of vehicles they can operate under their banner. The law needs to be enforced when they do not comply. They need to abide by the current meter taxi regulations. In addition, they must refrain from undercutting prices to unsustainable levels to increase market share and then raise prices to unregulated high prices when demand increases. So currently for us, a meter is fitted into the vehicle, you've taken it and it's been certified or sealed by a taxi department. So you have a meter seal certificate, and obviously that seal is broken, you are then going contrary to the law. In addition, we would like these e-hailing companies to stop operating until they are legalized to do so, as they've been forced in countries mentioned before. We also object to the amendment of Section 66 of Act 5, Chapter 38 on page 40 of the amended document, paragraph C. An e-hailing app can never take the place of a physical meter for the reasons cited above. No country has defined a smartphone application as a taxi meter. We enclose a number of online articles which reflect how different countries are currently addressing the legislation aspects of e-hailing and Uber. We include the objections to the current NLTA we have submitted in 2008, which were not acknowledged or taken into consideration. That's what we feel. So simply, we are asking that how it's come to pass that international companies and technology has been able to lobby and to force amendments through our National Land Transport Act in 12 months, which is, if implemented, will have a far-reaching detrimental effects on the meter taxi industry of Africa and our workforce. We have been in business for over 65 years and are running registered. Tax-paying companies have been ignored. The meter taxi industry have followed international standards and offered professional transport service for the past 70 years. An example in point is from June 2000, when one of our drivers was praised by the very same parliament for his honesty when he returned a handbag containing 12,000 rand in cash to a client. Meter taxis in South Africa continue to offer personalized professional service to members of the public. We trust that our objection will be considered and acted upon, and we will be consulted on a way forward, a way to integrate technology within the legal framework. The South African meter taxi industry is requesting urgent enforcement against e-hailing services, of which Uber is one, which are not compliant with our current NLTA. In addition, we object to the amendments before you until further consultation with the industry. The meter taxi industry as it is. We are requesting input on future regulations for e-hailing, which will mutually beneficial and level the playing field with meter taxis and e-hailing apps, and do away with the current unfair competition of e-hailing vehicles proliferation without regulation. We also urge you not to allow aggressive Silicon Valley giant, i.e. Uber, to come into South Africa and lobby government to change laws which will have a negative impact on our local companies and individual meter taxi operators. Uber specifically pulled out of cities and countries where they have been forced to abide by the local regulatory laws as a self-fit their predatory business model. We have enclosed a number of articles where they have been forced to pull out or have voluntarily pulled out where they have been forced to comply with the countries or cities' transport regulations. We are objecting vehemently to the amendments before you today. Uber's modus operandi around the world has been to enter market, break the law, then try and change the law. We're appealing to you to ensure that does not happen in South Africa. So That being said, we are not against technology. We're not against e-hailing apps. It's just the method of implementation. We think it's too loose. There's too much scope. And you know, case in point, if one of the Uber or e-hailing app drivers get taken off the platform, they've got an operating license, what do? They just enter the general meter taxi environment, which is what a meter taxi would do. Is on Uber, if his Uber app is off, you'll go into the meter and go into the rank and rank for business, which is not a problem. It happens daily. There are certain sites, the airport, which was mentioned by one member, which is a private site, we need certain special regulation to work there from AXA, because it's a national key point. We need special permits to rank there, which is a different case in point. The harbor is also another one of them. So we're not against it. We just feel that it is too loose, and we don't want the overflooding, which has happened in the marketplace. And Uber themselves has stated that they've taken 30 to 40% of traditional meter taxi industry onto their platform. And from our side, our members have seen decreases in their income between 20 and 40% year on year since Uber has snowballed. So thank you for your time and for affording us the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baker.
Sorry, Madam Chairman, it's Baker. Baker.
Oh, Baker.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. You see, sometimes you to err is divine. This is indeed foreign to some of our language to spell some of these names. My apology, Mr. Baker. Honorable members, there we are. The presentation has been made. Honorable Humsinga.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, and also thank you for being very specific in terms of the experience and aligning that with what you suggest in terms of the presentation. However, I find your recommendations still a bit vague in terms of, you know, arriving at something that would make space, but then in a way control overlapping. So if you could expand a bit in terms of, apart from protecting your interests that you represent here, if you would kindly take a step back and look at the economy and the very important protection of each of the environments, what could you provide us with that we should consider in order to get some happy solution to these two very important elements within the current environment, which we would rather see participate in harmony than in conflict?
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibande. You okay? Okay. Honorable Ramatlaka.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair, and also thank you, Mr. Baker, for your presentation. There are a few issues I just want to check with you. It seems that the meter taxi has taken a view that they need a national consultation, and before anything else could be done, there must be a national consultation. Now, what I think we are doing here, I don't know who must do the national consultation. What we are doing here, this is a participation by you in the process of amendment of the Act. So we are consulting you with the amendment of the Act. Now we're soon to be demanding another set of consultation, a national set of consultation. Now I don't know who should have that consultation and for what intention, for what purpose. Now, I don't know whether you are asking us to suspend the process of amendment on this National Land Transport Act up until you have done your consultation, because a consultation amongst yourself, or is a consultation of a state-led consultation. That's the first set of things, because what I'm hearing you saying, and it's written down in your document, we object until this has happened, we object until this has happened. Certainly, the difficulty we're going to have is that we are in the middle of the process. There are certain other issues that need to be taken up with the authority in terms of administrative side, which is not us. It's talking to other people like the city, like the province, in terms of other issues. Now you seem to have put that in one basket. You have put us into one basket, and your demand that you would demand at the city of Cape Town or at the provincial, you are making it here, which is a bit difficult. Now maybe you need to clarify that the issue about the pricing issue. Now you say they must stop, there's another demand that the Uber must stop the undercutting of the prices. And that's another demand that we now are confronted with. I don't know how we are going to be able to effect that demand, make it, operationalize it. I mean, you have a spaza shop all over the places. They don't charge the same prices. You have a shops downtown. When you go by, you get into this store, you check the price, you go to the next one, you check the price, go to the next one, check the price, until you find the one that this one I'm buying. You're now asking us to do something that is completely out of our reach. I think it's a matter that it belongs somewhere, or you were very angry when you were told reading this thing, and it was going through your mind, and you put a pen to paper here on something that we can't do. On the clause that you're talking about, the one that you talk, page 4, it's DNC, that's the issue that you are dealing with. The issue about the e-hailing issue, which is there. It's there. What we're talking about now is how do we then begin to do it in a proper way. So when you go over to the to another page where you're talking about regulation, again here, there is also another section where you're talking about the national consultation. Now, then go down, you have, I mean, just summarize it in the following, that there are certain things that you're saying in here which belong to another forum and which you have been taking up with another forum. So if we isolate those that are specifically with regard to the Act, but the problem with them is you object without putting an alternative to the objection, that the wording that is here is wrong, this is the wording I want to see, and therefore the reject for the sake of rejection, it doesn't really hold, because we've got to replace a word with another word. Then the last part for me is this issue about the business model and all the others. It's part of the other things that we are with, which is on page 6. We are squeezed in some of the things that sometimes are not necessarily within our competence to deal with. But if you say you are not opposed to technology, So you are responding in saying that, well, the issue about e-hailing is a good thing, but it must be regulated properly so that the regulation, this is the process we're engaged about now. That's why we are here. That's why we are amending the Act, in order to do that, the regulations of the e-hailing, so that everybody knows what must happen. So that's what we are engaging with. But the rest, surely, when you had a radio, two-way radio before, that those CAP were using to communicate, and then they changed. As the development happens and the technology improves, there's different method of communication. So you say so, that you're not necessarily opposed to it. So I think you have to be innovative in your mind to say these things are going to happen. It may ask the question to meter taxis in terms of innovation. Why are you not innovating? Why you want to stay with the telecom phone lines if you can answer a phone in the corner of Darling Street and react to it? So there's a market of these things. So sometimes the fairness in the process, Mr. Baker, would when you meet next time with your consultation forum, ask the guys. They would not use the technology of 65 years old today, because there's a development that changes fast. In order for you to stay in a game of business, you've got to innovate. You've got to begin to say, this is what we now need to do and make it accessible. Because at the end of the day, the demand and the market. The question is whether there is any market for Uber currently, in terms of not the legality, the illegal part, the part of provision of a transport. And the answer would be yes, there is that market. That is why people are getting into this for apps, and they say, I'm around the corner of Adley Street. So you've got to begin to be in that game in order to stay in the game. Otherwise, you're out of the game of business. That is why. So all I was doing on this last part, I was just latching on your acceptance that you are not opposed to technology. But I was just simply saying, think about, take step to innovate in terms of it. How would it be lovely if you can change your meters while you are using meter, but be able to be closer to the market, to the demand, because your business is driven by the demand. If you can't provide efficient transport, you miss the market. So that's all I'm saying, Chair. So let me leave it there, but I think the other part of your rejection, maybe you should be able to think about what objections and what is alternative, rather than just to respond into it in an angry way to say, we don't even want to talk about this unless they have achieved one, because you're going to put us into that challenge. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd like also to join my colleagues to thank you for your presentation, but nevertheless, to come and try to get an amicable solution about what we have requested from you. Chairperson, through you, you see, with this public hearing of today, it reminded me, I think a week ago, there was a group who presented, or a lawyer company, something like that, who presented, when they are busy with their presentation, they've said, roadblocks are for nothing else but for corruption. Do you still remember, Chairperson?
Yeah.
But now,
since we have started this morning, we are receiving something which is different, which made us to suggest to the chairperson that, chairperson, in order to put our house in order, we must encourage the law enforcement that they must be alerted about these reports which are coming time and again about these people of unlicensed operating without any license. And I'll cite an example with today's presentation, with this one in particular. Somewhere they even quoted that with the South African map that the Uber, they are illegal but operating with impunity. And they even indicated from our laws that in terms of the National Land Transport Act of 2009, Section 50, they are saying it is obvious that Uber should not have been allowed to proliferate without being regulated and curtailed. It's not me, it's a presentation from the Texas. You know, to me, I'm learning more. Time and again, we're learning more. But again, to follow the steps from my colleagues from the latter speaker, Honorable Member Ramatlakane, I would like to ask you a question that, with your own presentation, would it help if e-hailing is separated from meter taxi service as a standalone mode as Uber has requested as well? I'm just asking. And again, Chairperson, there even, you see, there's something very interesting. Meter taxis and other people, the drivers and the like, you are the ones, most of the time, who are saying government or whatever section, wake up. You are giving us a wake-up call that something illegal is happening on the ground. But when we respond, when the law enforcement respond, you are the ones who used to cry again that no, these are necessary roadblocks. Again, you said no country has defied a smartphone application as a taxi meter. You also enclosed a number of online articles in the different countries. Correct, ne? Yes, Honorable Ramatlakane, you were right. Then, what is your view then? What is an alternative? Because it is very helpful when you are disagreeing with something and come with a different idea. Because from my side, I would say, the reason why we are trying to amend this bill is because we wanted to assist you in that regard. Because you have identified a lot of loopholes of people who are failing to comply, people who are undermining even the laws of this country, while ourselves were forced to bow to their laws of their countries if you arrive there. This is not a banana republic. This is South Africa. May you please then assist us that what will be the alternative in terms of the, on what we have rejected as well. Chairperson, let me put my case there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Roswandi. Singer? Okay, let me put it to you, please.
Thank you very much to the honorable members. I see you guys have listened attentively, that's good. Hopefully you'll listen attentively now and act what we want. Just with regards to honorable member, I can't remember his name, I apologize. With regards to the recommendations being vague, I just want to start with, apart from protecting our own interests, you know, our interest is the interest of the industry. So whether you are Mr. Mr. Sibanda with one taxi, or Mr. Ramatlakane with 50 taxis. The slice of pie that you get in must be a good piece so that you can eat well from the pie. And we want coexistence. So what we want is a protected industry, not pockets of the industry, but a protected industry. So, you know, what we recommend in regards to the e-hailing is a coexistence where you get technologies out there that the meter taxi speaks to the smartphone app, which acts as a payment gateway. So if I can just jump around, the meter taxi or transport industry is one aspect. Within it, you have your technology, you have your labor laws, you have payment laws, which is all under separate departments, you know, with regards to certain payment switching. For example, if you pay by credit card online, the payment switch in South Africa needs to be done in South Africa. If the service emits, is done from here. How do I know this? Because we tried to implement the payment gateway, which wanted to do switching overseas, and Nedbank told us you can't do that, which is illegal. If a payment service gets done here, the payment must be done here, which is something with Uber, down to. That was a big problem, according to exchange rate laws, which I know you guys don't have jurisdiction on. So that is important. If you're going onto eBay or other international websites, it's a different story. The service is happening that side. So, you know, we need to, obviously, within the industry, we can't just look at transport on its own. There's a lot of other factors we need to put in. So we want to coexist. We want to have an industry where people decide how they want to help. You know, we speak about technology, jumping to Honorable Ramatlakane. They speak about technology in the meter taxi industry. The meter taxi industry started off as a horse and carriage in the 1800s. It's called the Hackney carriage in London, and that was the first meter taxi. And the first meter was fitted to a horse and carriage, charging the wheel of the carriage and how far it traveled. And it used to be tick. Before, meters in taxi used to be manual. You had to turn it, and it would tick over. You know, like the old tolls that you go to the shop with a big button that was something similar to that. And technology has changed now. We have electronic meters that work to cars. It sends electronic pulses. They are call centers which have telecom phones. Now they have VoIP phones where you can phone in and transfer a call directly to a driver. I say, listen, this is the customer. Please speak to him directly. There are no problems, so I'm transferring directly to him. So we have, you know, meter taxi industry is one industry that has evolved. We have evolved so much that the minibus industry has been born out of the loins of a meter taxi industry, out of a need in our past where people needed to move lots of people quickly from further on into areas. And that's where meter taxi has evolved. That's why in our dispensation, meter taxi is 1 to 7 packs, over 7 packs, minibus. That is why it is like that in South Africa, because of that. So the first minibus taxi was a Valiant that ran from Hanover Park to Cape Town, and they put on bigger vehicles, and we all know what the minibus taxi industry is today. So, you know, we are an industry that is open to evolution. We, like cockroaches, you know, we're not going to die. We have to stay there and evolve all the time. So we're always doing that. There's email bookings, there's WhatsApp and all those technologies, and with apps, which is something that we need to integrate, and I agree with the suggestion. With regards to the national consultation, us as an industry feel like we weren't consulted with regards to how this change can be implemented, how apps could be brought in. When, again, Uber came in with something new, they had a lot of terms that wanted to dictate to us. So certain laws in South Africa says you must have your fare displayed on your vehicle. You must have your operating license number. Uber didn't want that, they wanted no branding. So we can't go against the law of your operating license, because then you can put your license in jeopardy. So those are all things that we need to do to get into, so we won't discuss. So there are, like I said, there are technologies that the meter speaks to a payment gateway which are available, which can be implemented. This process obviously is a consultation. It gives us opportunity to give our views, but we just feel before it reached this point, we weren't consulted on a national level. And we know that we fall under the Minister of Transport nationally, provincially, and in the city, or the different spheres. But unfortunately, the spheres of government don't always speak the same language. When you have the city's MAICO member for transport and the Minister of Transport and the National Minister, the Provincial Minister and National Minister, they don't talk together. And we want one kind of someone speaking from the same hymn book. That's what we would like, you know, for industry. And it's tough. I understand that, because national has to look at national issues, provincial, and city for city. So it's a really problematic thing. So we would like to have that common enforcement. And with regards to pricing, currently our operating licenses are issued by the province, which is vetted by the national minister, and in that license you are given a price. So invariably either given a limit, a maximum price, so you're allowed to charge, call it 12 rand per kilometer. That's a maximum. You can charge under that. So me as an operator, or Joseph as an operator, can determine his pricing. So your example of the spaza shop, you might sell a loaf of bread for 5 rand, but I'm selling it for 10 rand. Why? How do you know you can sell it for 5 rand and make a profit? Because you know your costs. Whereas Uber, being a technology company, doesn't operate the business, so they don't know the cost. You know your rent, you know what your electricity, you know what your staff costs, you know all of those things. Whereas me, 10 rand, I need to charge 10 rand because my costs are more. I'm based in the city, which is a higher rent, and you're based on the outskirts, which is cheaper. So there's lots of factors in the spaza shop. And same like a media taxi, the operators, the owners, the driver will know what their costs are. They're factoring in fuel, insurances, installments, having something for your salaries and maintenance and all those things. You factor it into your cost. That's why we need to know about pricing. That's why we mentioned undercutting, underpricing. And that fact can be seen by operators on ELN apps who have run into trouble, as just has been mentioned, where they couldn't pay their cars, they couldn't meet their obligations. And that is what is happening. So the current pricing is regulated by the provincial government, we'll speak from this point, and vetted by national. Right, again, we acknowledge the fact that we have objected to a lot of things, and yes, we should have maybe given alternatives, and it is something that hopefully we can take away from here and learn for the future. If we're going to tell you, please don't do this, let's give an alternative to think about, you know, it's something that will be good. Thank you, Honourable Sibanda. ELN app separate from meter taxis, I don't think that is something that we want, a separate dispensation, a separate category. I don't think that's needed. Again, an ELN app is purely that technology, which is to call. So someone decides to book on an app, it's not phoning, it's not emailing, it's just a booking engine. And the technology, it's a payment gateway, it's the way to book, so it's double-edged. So, you know, the tracking and the safety and all those ancillary stuff, is tons of things out there which are safer than a phone. If I take this phone and I throw it out of the window, you don't know where I am. Where there are other car tracking devices that are fitted into cars with safety measures, with anti-hijack, with panic buttons. It's all been done before, not through a cell phone. So, you know, there are other things that you can do. And in view to an alternative to the ELN app, I don't think there is an alternative. Like we said, markets have dictated. You know, nowadays people, 10 years ago, people weren't checking as much as you do now. You know, we send an SMS, was like, oh, once, you know, now you'll send a WhatsApp, you'll send in message. We are more tech-savvy society, so there is a need for technology, and we as a meter tech industry have to move with the times. We don't want to not move with the times, but we want to do it within a framework that's not going to kill our industry, and, you know, specifically Uber, again, we're going to jump out, so I don't want to attack them. Their global footprint is to have driverless cars. That is their goal, eventually, to have driverless vehicles. So, you know, we don't want to get to that point where you want to have a driver where people have, you know, we've seen in this year, people have come from nothing or had nothing and built themselves up to having a, you know, solid family life through working in a taxi. I call it a mobile ATM. You come in the morning with 10 rand in your pocket and you go back in the afternoon with 200 rand, which is, you know, something which no other, very few jobs can offer. I think I've answered all the questions. I'm just double checking, I think so.
Okay. Hey, Jack.
Okay, do you have any other follow-up members?
Covered. Thank you very much. Over to you, Jay.
Thank you very much, South African Meter Taxi Association. What becomes very important is that your submission goes a long way in sharpening our thinking. Because we're listening to you in the end as lawmakers, we should be able to say, having listened to the Meter Taxi Association, what is at stake here. Would like to really thank you very much for the inputs that you have made. Honourable members, I think it's time to take a body break and probably there will be lunch if we can take a body break for 45 minutes and then we can reconvene to take the next group of people that will be here. The meeting for now is adjourned for 45 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.